Hello, my name is Bob Bammer and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to 1994 for our end of year review show. I'm being joined by, firstly, Chris Lacey. Chris, hello.
How do?
Delmio.
Hi, Bob.
And Colin Judkins.
Hello.
We've got no news, we've got no audio. It's the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast uncut, I think. It just saves me doing another round of audio editing this evening. Anyway, this is our end of year review show. It's going to kind of appear in two parts. First part is going to be some kind of open plan discussion on a number of topics. And the second half is the all important end of year awards. That should be some fun discussion. We're going to start with WCW and specifically Hulk Hogan. Chris, I'll come to you first. Can we consider Hogan's first 6 months in the company a success?
It's been hit and miss. Obviously, we had at the beginning, there was the massive interest, the big success of Bash at the Beach, the match with Flair. But the problem is, he seems to have brought all his buddies along, which I don't think that's helping WCW, that we're getting all of the old 80s WWF guys in.
Well, we are now one down. We're now Honky Tonk Man has gone.
Yes.
It's a good
who's going to bring a honka honka burn in love with him?
Oh, anyone else. we've had Hogan's come in and he's bought, not direct. Well, he bought Jimmy Hart with him directly.
And see, that works.
I think that, boy, Colin, explain the Jimmy Hart thing to me. I don't get it. Why does Hogan need Jimmy Hart for?
I don't know.
Because it's not like he needs a manager. It's not like he needs a mouthpiece.
Didn't he? He sort of joined up with Hogan when he came back for the WrestleMania 9 run, and they just seem to have been joined at the hip. I don't know how it works. I don't know why. You're right. Hogan doesn't need a mouthpiece, but
anyway, that's by the by. He also brought along with him Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who, as we now know, is called the Butcher. Those are the kind of the direct ones, and then you can indirectly point to Mean Gene Oakland, who admittedly did precede his arrival, as did Bobby Heenan, but those are two, both guys who would have known Hogan for a long time. And then we can also look at, I think, the names you're gonna point to, which is Avalanche, aka Earthquake, Butcher as well, and Jim Duggan. Can we take some positives from this, or in terms of the Hogan friends, are they all just largely negative?
Personally, no, but to look at it as a bit of a devil's advocate, Bob, I mean, there is the likes of long-time show collaborator Craig Wilson, loves a bit of nostalgia. So, I mean, you're kind of harping back to the 80s, you've got Brutus there, you've got Duggan, Earthquake now is Avalanche. I mean, it's going to draw some eyes. I mean, if you're channel hopping, you see the guys on TV, it's maybe going to attract an audience, but for us, I mean, I think we're focusing and we're kind of coming up next year to midway through the decade. And I mean, flashing back to the 80s, for me personally, it's not a great thing. But one of the things that I suppose we can hopefully look forward to is after seeing Mr. T at Starrcade, hopefully we can maybe see some segments on Saturday Night Bedtime with T.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope we're done with Mr. T. I think the novelty has worn off with that. But Chris, back to the kind of original question. That bit aside, like the WCW put a ton of money into bringing in Hulk Hogan. It's a ridiculous contract he's on. It's not something you could justify on a cost basis, really. In terms of the exposure he's gone, has it been worth it for WCW?
Well, it's made WCW a household name now.
Were they not before?
More than they are now. Obviously, you have your true wrestling fans would know the NWA that then turned into WCW. But if you think the boom of wrestling was all centered around Hulk Hogan, he's still a relevant pop cultural icon. It's like Michael Jordan going to any other basketball team. They automatically become the known team because they've got the main known player. So in that case, I think it's worked because obviously it's brought more eyes onto the product and more acknowledgement of it because they have the main marquee name.
I totally agree with Chris, to be honest, Bob. I think it definitely gives them a name for your casual fan. Not everybody that's watching WCW is reading the Observer, they're not reading the Torch. They might not automatically think WCW is even in the same league as a New York territory. I mean, Hogan does bring that instantly. He's got the kind of sidekicks with him, which, as I say, I'm a bit detrimental of myself, but it does definitely give them that name factor to put them up, especially with the death of the territories in the last 5-10 years. It puts them up in that top bracket of franchises in the country.
Colin?
It's taken WCW mainstream. So, I mean, from that point of view, they can argue that the money they've put up for Hogan is worth it. We all know that it probably isn't. I mean, we've said the contract is ridiculous, but it's got WCW that mainstream spotlight that they were looking for, and they're looking to build the company up so that it's a nationwide promotion rather than a down south wrestling promotion. For that, you can't really argue, you can argue it's a stupid contract, but you can't argue that it's not put eyes on the product.
No, I think your guy's assessment is probably about right in terms of he's a guy with massive name value and a guy that, you know, and I think when we look at the early run of WCW pay-per-views in 1994, they were putting on some really good stuff. But the kind of the problem was, it was like, well, for that to gain traction over a wide enough base to be able to grow your audience, it's probably going to take 18 months, 2 years, maybe longer for kind of word to get around. It's just hard to create a big enough noise just with good wrestling. And the irony really is that, and part of this is kind of, Chris, what you mentioned about in terms of kind of Hogan's friends that have come along, is that the irony is that since Hogan has come along, he's almost put more eyes on an inferior product. Like the product kind of after Hogan's arrival has in part directly and in part indirectly gone quite downhill in terms of Hogan's across more of the segments. We've seen, you know, I mean, Hogan and Flair was fantastic, and we'll come on to that in a minute. But we've seen, since Flair's departure, it's Hogan feuding with the Three Faces of Fear, which I think was a, I won't call it a disaster. I guess we'll wait and see with kind of the Starrcade bar, but it certainly wasn't very good in terms of entertainment value. But it's undeniable that Hogan's brought more eyes on the product. You look at the bar rates of Bash at the Beach and for Halloween Havoc, even if they did have to kind of Flair out to sacrifice himself for that. And more so the Clash of the Champions rating in August. Those numbers speak volumes, even if some of the other numbers, like TV ratings, like house show, things like that, haven't perhaps caught up yet or haven't perhaps reflected that. The big events that Hogan's been on have certainly sold. Del, let's go to this Hogan and Flair feud, which,
yeah,
you know, we can kind of debate, well, we'll debate later on how big a feud that was. But in terms of that feud, did WCW get about as much out of that as they possibly could? Because I remember we were speaking about this kind of early mid, kind of the end of spring going into summer and thinking, what are WCW's options? Did they get the most out they could out of that?
I think they got all they could and probably more. Whether that's to a positive or a negative effect, Bob, I think I'll show in the long term. I mean, we spoke at the time of Hogan coming in about potential rivals down the line. Here we are 6 months later and up into Starrcade. The only real opponent we've seen for Hogan was Ric Flair. We got a good couple of pay-per-views and a clash at it as well. I think it's, at the minute, it kind of has a bit of a worry inside of it might be a bit short-term booking. It could be that they've built up the match, they've had that rivalry out of it, but now we're in a position where we've got Hogan, but we no longer have Flair. If they built it up for that big angle, and then kind of forgot about what are we going to do next. We're talking about the end of the year here, so we're obviously looking back at 94, but I think we've got to have a bit of an extent of looking forward to 95 as well. And that's maybe just a bit of the Flair Hogan situation that maybe WCW's been a bit short-sighted on for me.
Colin?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I don't know where they go from now.
they've got Savage. I mean, that's not a name we've mentioned up until this point, and that's certainly worth discussing in a minute. But kind of heading forward, I think it's going to revolve around Hogan, Savage, and Vader, isn't it, Colin?
Well, I think to get the best out of Hogan right now, they need to have him focused on guys that we've not seen him in the ring with already. So you have your Ric Flair feud, which is like the dream feud. It's the big NWA guy versus the big WWF guy. I think if I was WCW, I'd be looking to keep him against other WCW guys. I mean, you could have the Vaders.
Sting, I suppose. I mean, I don't know Sting how to get around
face,
that.
Face, I'm not sure.
Chris Asterius, back on track. How do you rate the Flair-Hogan feud?
Surprisingly better than I was expecting. The build-up, we all knew the build-up was going to be easy to do, because you've got the guy from the other company who was the face of wrestling versus what most pure wrestling fans, especially of the 80s, have said was the best wrestler of the 80s. Dream match. Because while Flair was in WWF, they never had a TV match. You're finally seeing Hogan Flair. So the build-up was easy to do. The fact that they pulled it off and we actually got some good matches out of it was the thing that surprised me. Because obviously there was the reports from when Flair was in the WWF that he was having the house show matches and the crowds were hating on them. But they did it. They got good matches out of the four matches they had together were all really good. I don't like the retirement thing for Flair though. It has to be said, because you've now taken your homegrown superstar, and he's gone now.
I don't hate the Flair retirement thing. I mean, I don't love the fact that it looks like they're going to bring him back probably within the first 6 months of next year. But if Flair's going to retire, he should retire in a way that maximises revenue for the company and maximises what they can do after he's quote-unquote retired. And I think losing to Flair, losing to Hogan in a retirement match is probably the best way to do it, isn't it? And how else would Flair retire, really? I mean, there are other options. You know, we saw kind of, you know, what one idea you could have done was at Starrcade last year in 1993, where he had the match where he was the babyface going into against Vader, and the stipulation there was if Flair lost, then he'd retire, and all right, he won that match and went into 1994 as champion. But I think that would have been another way to go. But I don't think it's the silliest business idea to say, look, we've got this megastar in Ric Flair, we've got this guy in Hogan, and as much as they kind of played it out on TV that can these two coexist, there's a real truth to that. Can Flair and Hogan, in whatever context you look at it, coexist atop a wrestling program? The answer is probably not, because you can't keep feuding with them, so you have to define one down under the other. And do we want to see Ric Flair back in the mid-card, where he was kind of at points in 1993?
See, the thing is, what you could do is you could put the title on Flair. You don't have to have Hogan as a champ, because Hogan can draw as the name himself.
But is he not then not in the main event?
But you can have two main events. Every show can be a co-main event. You've got your wrestling champion in Flair and your spectacle in Hogan. And that way, you can also build Hogan up by you can feed him Earthquake, you can feed him Brutus, you can feed him Duggan, you can feed him Honky Tonk, because you've got the nostalgia bit there, and Hogan's that. And it also means you can still have good wrestling. You can have your Flairs, and Flair versus Sting, Flair versus Austin, Flair versus Steamboat. There are all these people that you could put with Flair that could still have a good match. And you have that for the title, and that's your one thing, that's your one hook for your wrestling fans. And you've got Hogan as your hook for the people that are there just to see Hogan.
I think that's very difficult to pull off. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's just, if you present it like that, like, how do you keep the two of them apart? Like, how do you keep doing that? Because if Flair keeps winning and Hogan keeps winning, at what point people go, well, hang on, hasn't Flair earned his title shot, or hasn't Hogan earned his title shot?
But if you're going to feed people in, like, the faces of fear, the face of fear are never gonna, we're never gonna win a title.
They're awful.
But that's the thing, but you put Hogan against them, that's a main event of a show. It's not a good main event of the show. I'm not trying to sort of say that. But in name value, it's a main event, like headlining event, is, look, we have Hulk Hogan, the super American hero, against this evil person.
Colin, have they damaged Ric Flair if and when he comes back?
Well, I'm sort of along the same lines as you, Bob. I don't know how they can both coexist. You're going to want to believe that both Flair and Hogan are going to want to be the top guy. If we go with the suggestion where you put the title on Flair, then have him against the Stings, the Vaders, etc., I can't see how then you would justify all the money being spent on Hogan and not being in the title picture. Because they've brought him in and they've built him up to be this... Well, they don't need to build him up to be the megastar, but you get what I mean. He's the big megastar.
Yeah.
He's the guy that's coming in. He's going to be leading the company forward. Oh, but we're not going to have him fight for the title. I mean, that's not going to work. So, Flair retiring, I get the angle, but I don't see how it's going to work for Ric Flair. I really don't. I think he could end up coming back, and like you said, in 93, being around the mid-card, which is just... It's a strange concept.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It sounds like he's going to come back, and he might come back as a babyface, which could be very interesting, and I guess we'll see how that pans out. I kind of want to look back more than looking forward, but I understand we're going to drop into that at various points tonight. But in terms of WCW as a whole, coming away from Flair and Hogan, how was the year been? I think, you know, I kind of wrote a review of WCW on the website and kind of said, well, you know, it's transitioned a ton between where it was at the beginning of the year and where it is now. Is it a net positive, Del?
Overall, I think the eyes in the product, the increased kind of gates with Hogan and things coming in, I think it gives you a big opportunity to get that focus on what else is there. You're going to get, with Hogan being there, you're going to get half an hour to 45 minutes on Hulk Hogan. You've got another two and a half hours of a show that there's going to be increased eyes on. Have they made the most of that? I would probably say no. Overall, Bob, looking back to the shows earlier in the year, as you said, they were doing some good stuff, especially with the likes of Spring Stampede. Hogan then coming in, a lot of it, understandably, has been on him and Flair to an extent as well. But I think they really need to look forward to making the most out of the eyes that they've got on the product, on the full product, and not just Hogan. Because Hogan's there as your headliner. Hogan's there as the main event, the franchise that they've brought in to make their sell national. But what else is there? If you're going to tune in and watch Hulk Hogan, how many years did we see him in WWF? And a lot of the time, it was really similar stuff. That's going to fade over time. So I think they need to make the most of the guys that they've got on that undercard. Your mid-carders going for the US title, TV title, even the tag teams as well, and make sure that people are seeing for the product for what it is and not just that main attraction match. They want to make sure that all the eyes are on the full 3 hours and make the most out of what they've got there and building it.
Chris, same question, thoughts on WCW more generally?
Pretty much the same as what Del's just said, really. Make sure that you don't forget that what sort of made you special and different in the first place. Look at what we had at the beginning of the year with the good standard of wrestling. Make sure that you still have that there and also use Hogan. Look at different ways of pushing Hogan and sort of put him against different people, but sort of also don't forget what it is that made you good at the beginning of the year.
Any specific highlights, Chris? Any things that stand out for you?
I've loved Regal all year and all of his sort of shenanigans with different opponents during the year. The series of matches with Steamboat and Austin over the US title. Yeah, it was that sort of the mid card putting on solid wrestling matches of a high quality consistently.
Del, kind of same question on the highlight front?
Similar as well, as you know yourself, Bob, I'm a big fan of Regal. I've really liked Steve Austin this year as well. I think they've got guys in that middle of the card that's still at an age where they're mouldable. They're talking late 20s where they can really do things with these guys. And as I said earlier on, hopefully it's something that the umbrella of the main event isn't going to overshadow those guys coming up, because there's definitely some potential there. And yeah, at the minute, Austin's got that injury that hopefully we can see. Steamboat's obviously struggling at the minute injury-wise as well. But there is definitely the foundations there to build this as a solid competition for national supremacy. So hopefully they've got the long sight booking to follow through in that.
Colin?
My highlight for WCW is the fact that they have a solid roster that is capable of putting on some really good matches. Their only problem is going to be balancing that with Hulk Hogan, because they have to put Hogan on TV for the money they're paying him. I'm just hoping that he doesn't take up the TV time of the likes of Austin, love the likes of Regal, Steamboat, because WCW need to show that they have the wrestling that the people want to see. They've got the eyes on the product now. They've got the undercard and the midcard that can help to enhance it even further, and I'm just hoping that they don't get lost. So my highlight really is the potential of their undercard and midcard.
Yeah, I mean, WCW for me this year, I think a lot of the highlights are probably stacked in the first kind of third of the year, that kind of that run of pay-per-views before Hogan arrived. And again, not to say necessarily that Hogan's arrival was directly responsible for the down, kind of the downturn in the quality of the pay-per-views, but certainly it was partly responsible. But I think the Nasty Boys had a great run of tag matches in the first kind of 4 or 5 months of the year. They had a very good year in the whole. Cactus Jack was excellent, and you wonder, not that we've really got time to discuss it, but you wonder why they let him slip through the net, given how good he was, certainly at the back end of 93, and almost as much in a very different role, in that kind of tag team role against the Nasty Boys in the first half of this year. Vader's been excellent. Yeah, there's just been a number of highlights. Again, to summarise it in a couple of minutes, it's probably just best to say go back and listen to all the other shows, but I think it's been a good year for WCW on the whole. And to echo all of your sentiments, that they're in a really good position now. And the one thing they've got to make sure they do is the eyes of on Hulk Hogan aren't going to be around forever. And you're going to have to give people a reason to stick around that isn't about Hulk Hogan. And that's what they've got to do. But they've got time. They've got Savage as well, who's another guy who's in a similar kind of bracket. But he's a guy that is going to attract eyeballs and is going to produce probably some very good television in the first half of next year. It's just whether they can turn that into more long-term viewership. We will move on to talking about WWF. Colin, I'll come to you first, specifically on Bret Hart, who was the WWF champion from kind of WrestleMania in the middle to end of March through until November at Survivor Series. Didn't main event any of those shows, apart from WrestleMania, where he kind of backed into it, for want of a better explanation. Did Bret do anything wrong?
Not in my eyes, he didn't do anything wrong. I think Bret's done what was asked of him. When they put the title on Bret Hart, they knew what they were getting. They were getting one of the best workers around right now, a credible champion who can out-wrestle anybody he's in the ring with. As far as doing anything wrong, I really can't see anything, because he's had some great matches with some talent that maybe aren't at his level, but he's made them and helped them look good. And I mean, he helped Bob Backlund become the WWF champion. Bob Backlund, WWF champion, off of the back of a feud with Bret Hart. So
let's not undercut Backlund's role in that.
He did phenomenally well. I mean, that sort of whole thing just came out of nowhere, and the whole psycho lunatic fringe Bob Backlund it was incredible to see it just appear off of the snap and the chicken wing against Bret Hart on Superstars. And yeah, all credit to Bob Backlund, but as I say, I don't think Bret has done anything wrong.
Chris?
I have to agree wholeheartedly with Colin there. I don't think it's anything that he's done. Because pretty much consistently, he's had match of the night on every show that he wrestles on. I don't know whether it's because he's not the best on the mic. They just don't know that, because he can pull a good match, they don't need to build stories for it. I just don't know what it is and why they didn't sort of put him as main event. And because it's when you look back at, say, like King of the Ring, for example, and they put Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper as the main event, when, you know, it should have been Bret and Diesel should have been the main event. You know, it was the title match. That in itself should be the reason it's the main event of the show. I just don't understand why, really. What the WWF were thinking of not giving him the stories to work with. Because the in-ring side is nailed down. The problem I see with this, though, is because of how he's been as the champion, if with the world title he can't be a main eventer, what does he do now that he doesn't have the belt?
I guess we'll find out. Dale, I mean, is there, from the WWF standpoint, is there an argument you can make that explains why Bret Hart wasn't kind of in the position? Is it just a simple case of Bret Hart is very good, but he's not it? Is that it? Is that it in short?
I think we've mentioned it before, Bob. I think I've even said it myself on the show, that I think the only issue that Bret really has with more the booting of the product as anything else is he's not Hulk Hogan. I think they're coming off a larger-than-life character. They're coming off somebody that just oozes charisma. And, I mean, that's the one chink in Bret's armour. I mean, as the guys have said, the wrestling's down. He's made just unbelievable situations at just dire products. I mean, the Backlund match, Backlund going into that match was on fire promo-wise. The stuff he was doing in Raw was really, really watchable. But, I mean, we're talking 1994, not 1984, and getting that match out of Backlund, it just kind of shows what the guy can do. I mean, we've seen him fighting, as I say, Backlund. We've seen him fight the 1-2-3 kid, who, I mean, you've got an easy 20 years there on Backlund, but he still managed to make matches out of the both of them. You've got Diesel, who, they've obviously got a lot of stock in this guy going forward, and Bret was there to help push him along at the midpoint of the year. I mean, he's worked with pretty much every shape and size and age and type of character you can look at, and he's put matches out of all of them. I mean, it's really just a bit of a mystery, and as I say, the only thing I can see a chink in the armour is that charisma factor. But then at the same time, they've just gave the ball to Diesel, who has got a brilliant look, but again, kind of lacks a bit on the charisma side. So I mean, it is a bit of a worry, especially what Chris was saying there, where Bret was starting the mid-card holding the most prestigious title in the company. Now he's lost that. Where are we going to see him go? I mean, are we going to be destined to see Bret Hart opening shows for now? Or, I mean, it's just really strange. I mean, but as I say, for Bret Hart, the original question, what did they do wrong? For me, totally agree with both of the guys. Absolutely nothing.
Colin, how do you rate the Bret and Owen feud?
I think Owen has come quite a long way in a short space of time. I really enjoyed the feud. The build up to, you know, from Royal Rumble.
Well, from Survivor Series 93, yeah, you really
started,
were about
started
that
back at Survivor Series, but you had the reconciliation, then the leg kicked out from the leg, and it just went on, it just sort of built from there, and Bret saying that he's never gonna fight his brother. I think they did the whole WrestleMania thing really well, and giving Owen some wins over Bret is clever. I mean, getting a clean pin on Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10, the same night Bret wins the title, is huge for Owen. And I think that you're probably going to see Bret and Owen carry on feuding without the title, obviously, because Owen was a big part in Bret losing the title in the first place. I really enjoy their work, and I do hope they're going to carry on.
Yeah, I think it's testimony to, you know, we joke about the leg under the leg thing, and probably quite rightly so. But I think it's kind of an illustration of just how far Owen Hart's come, that you watch some of his promos. I think the King of the Ring coronation promo was the first one where you're like, hang on, this guy can talk. And that's not something you'd have said 4 or 5 months before, as we saw. And I've watched some of his promos more recently. It's like, yeah, he can talk. And And I don't know whether something just happened around WrestleMania just after, but the heel character really seemed to click for Owen. And it combined for a really good feud. And the highlight, I think, certainly for WWF in 1994 was a feud that spanned the entire year, that a really good match at WrestleMania, a very, very good cage match at SummerSlam. Some people would say I'm undercooking that with my praise. I didn't think it was great. But no, it's the whole Brett thing is very difficult to answer just because, and I think I probably said this last month, so I won't overdwell the point, but I think it's just because it's not to say that Bret Hart is necessarily the ideal guy. If they had other guys available, or if Bret Hart was in a different era, because he was around in the 80s, but if Bret Hart was around when Hogan was at its peak, you'd say you'd pick Hogan. So it's not to say that they're overlooking a potential megastar here. But Chris, when you look at all their other options, it's quite difficult to work out why they insisted on going with Piper and Lawler and Undertaker. Chris, it's very strange.
The only one that I slightly got a justification for was the Undertaker, because that is the whole sort of spectacle of this guy being against himself. But
it was awful, though.
It was absolutely dreadful. It was like
it's only going to get a mention in our end of year awards. Let's say that. I won't talk more any further than that. But
are we going to put it forward for feud of the year?
Yes.
We'll see.
It was one of those. Of I got why that was main event, because obviously you had the whole mystery and all that, and it also meant that, you know, they could have time to do with Cage and stuff. But I don't get why King of the Ring. Because what did Piper do afterwards?
Nothing. He just disappeared.
Did he even show up before that? It was just a pre-tape promo, wasn't it?
Was he on? He might have been on One Raw, but yeah.
It was awful pre-tape promo as well. It was like it was done on his own video camera.
Yeah, they were shot in like his spare room or something like that, or just like outside, just like in the streets, and it was like all very strange. That was a low light.
What did that benefit the company? It didn't. Where you put the title match on last. It's simple, basic booking. This is your champion. This is the most coveted thing that everyone in your company wants.
That's it should be the pinnacle. Final match.
Yeah.
It's very strange, very strange. But, Dale, your thoughts on Owen Hart?
Another great fan. I've got Regal in WCW, Bob, and I've got Owen in WWF. These are two guys that I'm really, really excited for in 95. As Colin was saying earlier on, I mean, he just, the evolution of Owen Hart has just been amazing this year. The way that character's clicked with him, and even just the little things. I mean, if you look back 91, 92 with Owen Hart, you've got him dancing about in Technicolor with Coco Beware. I mean, he's just an entirely different entity these days. The match style's been really stripped back. He's cut out the high flying to a big extent, where I'm wrestling as a bad guy now. The feud with Bret Hart, I mean, we know they're brothers, we know they're great wrestlers, but in 1994, being able to carry off a feud that goes in excess of a year long and still actually captivate an audience, It's not an accident. The matches have been brilliant, with the match at Mania where Owen got that win that really made them the King of the Ring win, the talking after that, and then the cage match with Bret at SummerSlam as well. It's just been entirely about the evolution of that for me. I think he's done excellent this year.
Colin, can Owen carry a feud that doesn't involve feuding with Bret? Is that the big question going into next year?
Well, it's the thing which surely we're going to find out sooner or later. It's going to be interesting, because obviously he's going to have chemistry with Bret because it's his brother, but it's going to be interesting to see him working with other people for that point. Exactly. Will he? We just don't know. He might have slipped into this character, the heel character that he is now, because he was so comfortable with who he's working with. So going into next year, if he's put against some other guys, I mean, you could look at Razor Ramon, maybe a feud over the Intercontinental title, possibly in the future somewhere. It would be interesting to see how he's going to interact with people that's not his family.
Well, we'll certainly find out. Dale, let's talk about Bob Backlund. We'll come on to Diesel in a minute. But I thought When the idea was first mooted that Backlund was going to be, you know, just in the title hunt, not forget winning the title, I thought, I think I said it, I wondered what the hell they were thinking. And yet, by the end of it, I'm like, why was it only 3 days long, his title run? I thought Backlund had possibly the best year of anybody across any promotion.
Definitely one of the most shocking, anyway, as you said. I don't think there was really anybody that was kind of whetting their appetite with the thought of Bob Backlund coming in 10 years after his last, well, near enough 10 years after his last reign. But as I say, for me, the Raw stuff, the TV stuff, it was just totally different. Especially when you've got the likes of a new generation coming through where they're all kind of trying to find their feet a wee bit. Backlund just went in. And a lot of the time just stole the show, whether he's doing colour on the desk, whether he's doing the in-ring stuff, or just even walking it, even just when the man walked it and goaded the crowd, he just had missed a beat. I mean, for me, the match itself was a bit disappointing. You look back at what Backlund was in his day as a technical wrestler, but then anybody that's really getting into a ring in 94 with Bret Hart, you're probably going to be coming off second best for a spectacle with technicalities. But as I say, TV-wise, I just think he could have been absolute gold for the company, and having that short turnaround, it really was a bit of a disappointment. I mean, looking at the other guys that have come in through the year, I mean, with the older guys coming in, we've seen Jerry Lawler, obviously, pretty much week by week in King's Court when he's not kind of sidelined with any court stuff. But when he's in the King's Court, when he's in the desk doing the matches as well, and the promo stuff, he can still do it. He nailed off a really weird match at the Survivor Series. He'd done it with Roddy Piper, but Roddy Piper, where did he go? As we say, we've seen a couple of promos, we've seen one match. Backlund could easily have filled in a lot of spaces in this, and I think a lot of people maybe thought when he was coming in, that's what he would be. He would just be a bit part player, maybe go over a younger guy and then disappear. But the TV stuff was just absolute gold for me, and I hope we still see him in 95 to an extent.
Colin?
I'm hoping. I mean, I'm actually disappointed, and I never thought I'd say that. I'm disappointed that Bob Backlund isn't still the WWF champion.
Yeah, which is,
if you'd have told me I'd say that in January, I would have never believed you. But I think the work that he's done since he snapped has been nothing short of fantastic. I mean, as well, you have to give credit as well to the WWF for building him.
Of all of the things they've done wrong this year, I don't think they put a foot wrong with Backlund, other than perhaps when he lost the title.
But, I just don't understand it. When we've got the, what did Brett do wrong? He's now lost the title to Bob Backlund. Then they give it to Diesel 3 days, an 8-second match. What did Backlund do to deserve that?
Well,
it's awful.
Let's look at it this way. If Backlund had never won the title, we wouldn't have been necessarily talking about a massive injustice. It wasn't like they gave Backlund the title and then turned sour at him. They just wanted to pivot the championship from Brett to Diesel. So I don't think it's a case of Backlund doing anything wrong, because Backlund's role was purely transitional, nothing more than that. But I think, I mean, he's been great. I mean, that angle on Raw, I think it's like second week in September or something like that, where Backlund is in the ring with Vince McMahon and he calls out anyone to, and also, has there been anything better on TV this year than their build of the chicken wing? It's been great. And that segment with Lou Gianfredo from the WWF magazine, that was fantastic. And that was one of their best things they've done this year. Certainly the best non-Bret Hart, Owen Hart thing they've done this year was that. Shawn Razor, but yeah.
The chicken wing is one of wrestling's most basic moves. And in the space of a few months, WWF have built it to one of the most feared submission holds in all of wrestling.
Come back to the poll at Survivor Series. I think that's, you know, those kind of wrestling polls don't get voted for pro babyface, pro heel. It just doesn't happen. And yet, was it like 80% voted?
I think it was about 79% or something.
Amazing. Chris, what do you think about Backlund?
As both everyone sort of said, you know, at the beginning of the year, I'd have been like, why is he here? He's well past it. But the snap and the creative since then of just him being an absolute loon has been a joy to watch. You know, the the, as I was saying, the building of the chicken wing, the nutty promos, the nuttiness on commentary. Going forward with him, I'd probably sort of maybe have a little bit less in ring. He's still got it, but I wouldn't want to see it all the time. But I would quite like to have him on commentary every week.
Just to drop in an idea, Bob, I don't know if you want to kind of mull this over yourself, but we were talking earlier on about Owen Hart and ability to feud with a non-family member and having maybe that kind of bit of a detraction. And I'm talking about the idea of Owen working with Backlund. Backlund does the TV stuff and Owen does the matches.
Oh, what, pairing them together?
Yeah.
How? What, as in, like, Backlund, what, managing Backlund Owen?
Being, yeah, Backlund being maybe Owen's mouthpiece, Owen's manager, thanking him for kind of getting him back to the top of the mountain. Now he was the future back in the 80s and now sees the future for what it is Owen Hart. Owen Hart can go in, do the five-star matches. He's got Bob Backlund on the outside that can help him out with the talking side of it and building the character. I think that's got legs.
Yeah. No, I, like so, I mean, it's one of those things, if you'd have pitched me that before what happened at Survivor Series happened, I might have gone, I'm not really sure it makes sense, but I think you're right, given that Owen played the part in Backlund winning the title, I think that's a pairing that makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right, they probably both, you know, patch up each other's deficiencies.
Bring it
you know?
In the best, yeah.
Yeah. But both are set for big 95s, I think, as well. We can't go any further without talking about Diesel. Colin, started the year as, well, and much of the year as kind of Shawn Michaels' sidekick, had the great Royal Rumble, had a very good showing at King of the Ring, and ended the year as champion. I mean, and what a year for Diesel.
I mean, he started off, we talked about him a lot, back in, I think it was February, was it January, February podcast about the Royal Rumble, and, we was talking then saying the sky could be the limit for the guy. And 12 months down the line, he's ending the year as WWF champion, which it's a phenomenal year, but you can make the argument that it's too much too soon. If the one argument we had against Bret Hart, would be his mic skills, Diesel really is no better, no better at all, but he's 7 foot tall, 300 odd pounds. He looks the part. And I think that WWF in the past, if you say with Hogan, the big larger than life character, you don't get much larger than life than a 7 foot giant.
Certainly not. I mean, that's the rationale, long story short. They want to create the next Hogan. They're going with a younger guy. A guy, well, I'd say with a better look, perhaps not. But a guy that doesn't have a fingertip of the charisma of Hogan, but then again, neither did Luger, or so that did fail. Comes a little bit in a minute as well. But yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. I don't think they've really put much wrong so far. We spoke about the first promo last month. And that was what it was. But I think other than that, they've done a great job with Diesel. Chris, what do you think?
I'm a little bit shocked they did it as fast as they have with him. It's one of those of looking at him or Razor, I would have thought they'd have gone with Razor first. Because Razor has the charisma as well as the look. But as it is the land of the giants, as Colin was saying, you know, there is no one bigger than Diesel. So as a sort of standard bearer for the company that was built on giants, he looks more the part than Brett did, I suppose. You know, he's Brett looks an average sized bloke with muscles. Diesel's a giant.
Diesel is a superstar, isn't he? In a way that Brett perhaps isn't.
Yeah, but hopefully he's got people working with him backstage on promos and trying to find a character and a sort of thing for him. Because as I said, for half the year he was the muted bodyguard of Shawn, and then you sort of had that little bit of character building with the breakup with him and Shawn and terrible promo after he won the title. At the minute, I worry about that, but
we've got to let it play out, I think, haven't we? I mean, I don't think they've done much wrong so far.
It's one of those, if they put someone with him who can mentor him backstage of the TV persona side of it, he could be quite good if he can get a character out. I think he's a little bit deer in headlights at the minute, though.
Yeah. Colin, we've spoken largely about what I think you'd probably call positives for WWF this year. I think that's probably not representative of the year they've had, and I think when we get to the awards, we're going to talk to certainly some of the negatives they've had. But we come to the topic of Lex Luger, and a guy who entered the year, I think, still as the guy who they thought was going to be it. And then, are we looking at the Royal Rumble where the kind of the Lex Express kind of derailed? Is that fair to say? Not that the Express was a coach rather than a train, I suppose, but fair enough.
Yeah, I think so. The Royal Rumble result, I think, proved that they weren't comfortable with Lex Luger headlining WrestleMania, which showed that they had lost faith in the guy and they'd realised that he wasn't going to be Hulk Hogan. And I think the way his WrestleMania match ended, it was a pretty piss poor finish. Just the slight
disqualification with Mr. Perfect, wasn't it?
The slight tap of the hands on to Mr. Perfect and then a disqualification. And that was, to me, that was Lex Luger's WWF run. It's anything he does now is not really going to mean much at all.
No, I mean, he's still a guy with a bit of equity, but certainly his year has been a massive nosedive. Dale, were they wrong to stop the Luger push?
In hindsight, I would definitely say so. I mean, we've seen him kind of try his best way. I mean, how many feuds have they started and just ended this year without a resolution? I mean, they've definitely gave him kind of every conceivable option that I think they can come up with. I mean, it's just back to that charisma factor again. He's got the look. The only thing is he's no Bret Hart with wrestling and he's no Hulk Hogan with charisma. So when you've got one of those two options, as we've seen with Bret this year, it's hard enough to get them over. When you're lacking both, it's really a bit of a struggle. I mean, there's definitely still some cheers there for him. I'd say there's still definitely a place for him in that roster, but putting him up to the top, especially the way that they were trying to do, I think they've definitely made the right decision.
Chris?
Where do you start? I think, you know, he's not come in with the best of attitudes when he first came in, I don't think. They put all their power behind him with that last year with the Lex Express and the slamming of Yoko and the whole let's put him in red, white and blue and be the American hero. And then they got to the Rumble and went, let's hedge our bets. And he didn't do enough between the Rumble and Mania to give them any faith. And then since then, he's had chances to prove himself and sort of push himself back in. But he did nothing with that Tatanka run. He's done nothing with the stuff against the Million Dollar Corporation or any of that. And it's just basically sort of floundering himself because he's not making the most of any opportunities he's getting. So if he wanted to be the next big thing that he was meant to be, he's had the chance to do it. He's just clearly proven that he doesn't have the talent.
Colin, is there an argument to say that the Luger thing really ended the minute they didn't give him the title at SummerSlam, even in 93? I know we've discussed this on this podcast before, but wasn't that the moment that the Lex Express failed?
That was the perfect moment to put the title on him if they were ever going to. Again, it just seems to be the thing with his WWF title matches. It ended in a piss-poor finish that didn't really help him in any way. A count-out victory against Yokozuna. Big whoop.
Yeah. I know, obviously that's 93. That's by the by. Two more topics that we'll come to before we move on to ECW. Chris, we'll start with Yokozuna. Another guy entered the year as champion. He did headline Survivor Series, but it seems like they're done with him too. I think the best thing I can say about Yokozuna to illustrate the point more than anything is that he didn't get his title rematch, which just seems bizarre.
Yeah, it has to be said, you know, that would have been an easy first match for Bret. Would have been, yep, you fight Yoko again, get your rematch. But they clearly decided that wasn't what they wanted to go with, and think if with the fact they were trying to push Brett, I don't think someone the size of Yoko, Brett shouldn't be a giant killer, which meant that was why there was nothing to do for Yoko. And then there's no one there they're trying to build up as the next monster giant killer. So Yoko has no real purpose. He got his rematch with Taker, got put in the casket. Whether they find something new to do with him, who knows?
Colin, is it fair to say that they got everything out of Yokozuna they were going to get?
I think Yokozuna's run as champion was great.
I agree.
I think it was fantastic. He played the character so well. I think he was the perfect person to end Hulk Hogan, King of the Ring, back in 93. And from then they built him so well. He was the big monster, evil heel. And I think it's a shame that it's got to the point it has now where he loses the title at WrestleMania and then seemingly forgets that the WWF title ever existed. And it's a shame. I wonder if it's because they're done with him or if they've realized that maybe he isn't in the best shape.
If shape was an issue, they never hired him.
I think he's got heavier. I think he's continued to put the weight on. It's going to reach a point where.
Well, we'd know if Art Donovan was still on the show, we definitely
if he had a regular slot on Raw asking Vince how much he weighs, then we'd know every week just how much. Yeah, we'd know. But I think he's put on some more weight, and I'm wondering if the WWF are overly happy with that. I mean, I know that he was a big guy anyway, but if he continues to get bigger, it's going to cause a lot of problems down the road. And I think that they're going to keep him out of the picture just because of that.
Yeah. Del, to keep things moving along, I think the final thing, and it would be amiss of us not to discuss this, and there's certainly other things we could have discussed had we allocated about 4 or 5 hours for this show, but we can't not talk about WWF in 94 and not talk about Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon at WrestleMania. I mean, what a match. Ladder match, yeah. Continental title, phenomenal.
We do quite a lot of this in our ECW chat, Bob, that we'll come on to. There's certain moments that define what a company represents. ECW, in all fairness, seems to have them a bit more regularly with their TV outgo. But I mean, Shawn and Razor is definitely been something that needs to be bookmarked for WWF. I mean, that's the 10th anniversary, well, the 10th episode of WrestleMania that we've seen. And it's not only stealing that show, but a lot of people were saying at the time it's as good as anything they've seen in that 10-year period. I mean, we've seen the likes of Warrior and Hogan, we've seen Savage Steamboat at 3, but that was something totally different. And I mean, for a company that's trying to put weight behind this new generation, that's your bookmark. That's the point that you've got to look at for that being something that people can get behind. I mean, I'm sure it'll probably come up with all four of us when we're going to talk about the awards as a match of the year candidate. It was just something that if you could encapsulate what wrestling should be with a look to the future, I think we've seen a big part of that in that 20, 30 minutes back at Madison Square Garden. I mean, the two guys that were in it are young enough where you can see them building the company on either of them the next couple of years down the line. It was innovative to see that kind of gimmick match on a national stage. I mean, we know that there's been, I think the most of them's really been up in Stampede when Brett was still in the territories with his dad, but having it as in front of a national audience at the 10th WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden, all the pressure was on that match to deliver. And I don't think anybody expected it to be quite as good as it was, and hopefully that's a sign of things to come for this company.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we are going to probably discuss that more when it comes to Match of the Year, so I won't invite us to comment on that now. Del, we'll do ECW now for a few minutes. Now, Colin and Chris, if you want to jump in on this, do. ECW, I mean, we obviously have to talk about it in terms of the context of what it is, which is a regional promotion that we're kind of showcasing. But I think the last 4 or 5 months is arguably the best week-to-week wrestling I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In terms of, only was very, first couple of months of the year, there were some excellent high points, but the overall standard of the each hour every week was a bit more up and down. That's not to be critical, it's just to be, just to make a comparison. I think since August through probably until mid-November, it's kind of calmed down a bit as we got nearer Christmas. I think that run of 12, 14 shows was as good as anything in terms of not necessarily wrestling action, because their kind of remit is to protect the big wrestling action for the live events and not necessarily put all of that on TV. Certainly it's TV second. But in terms of week-to-week storytelling and creating compelling characters, out of guys that don't really have much equity, I think they've done 11 out of 10 almost. I can't think of a better way to describe it.
Pretty much across the board, Bob. Yeah, I mean, I think your bookmark for August is definitely spot on. I mean, even just being as blunt as kind of pinpointing it to that name change, going from Eastern to Extreme. I mean, you could argue in that period of 6 months or 5-6 months at the last half of the year, they've probably by far and away outdone anything on TV for the full 12 months, anything of the big two national companies. And even the spot on this show just merits how well they've done this year. I mean, if you look back to a year ago, you've got a small time regional territory, not really going anywhere fast, not making any big strides. But I mean, the Shane Douglas, Terry Funk stuff at the start of the year was definitely a high point for the first half. But as you say, everything, absolutely everything since the second half of the year has just been spot on. I mean, you've got great wrestling, you've got young guys coming through, you've got established names making those guys, you've got just captivating moments, whether it's segments in ring with the likes of the Sandman's retirement angle, the brutality, the Dreamer Sandman stuff, Cactus Jack's just got a new lease of life. As I say, the young guys that came through after that title tournament, This is our chance to really make this promotion stand out in people's eyes. I mean, it's not something that's the forefront of everybody's mind with the likes of WWF and the WCW, where they've got that history with kind of going back into the 80s with the boom in Hulk Hogan in New York. You've got the NWA stuff which is now kind of transformed into WCW. But this is something that people are aware of. ECW needs to be something that people are aware of, and for a regional TV show to have such a prominent place in this landscape, it's just miraculous how well they've done, where they've came from, and as you say, week for week, it's not even close to the content that these guys have been putting out. It's just been an amazing year.
No, I mean, we could go on for a lot longer, but me and Dale, me and you, we do kind of half an hour on ECW every month, so I won't kind of go on for it chapter and verse, but I think Douglas has been great, and he's going to feature certainly in my interview awards. And I look at the job they've done. I say with guys that it's not like a guy like Chris Benoit comes along and a guy like Dean Malenko comes along, and it's like, yeah, we get it. Like, these guys are great. You just put them out there. You don't need to be an expert in wrestling to be able to showcase those guys and make them entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I look at someone like the Sandman, who I watched kind of end of 93, 94. Sandman was just really terrible. Like, really, like, what's he there for? And in the space of about 4 or 5 months, they completely pivoted the character. They turned him from this kind of, you know, wishy-washy good guy into this captivating prick of a heel, I think is the best way to put it. And even in front of that audience where you've got kind of fans that are happy to cheer heels, I think he's done some pretty brutal stuff. We come back to the Singapore Kane thing with Dreamer in August, and that's just that August 30th show. And they're great with that. Dreamers come on, leaves and bounds. You look at, we talk about the WWF and WCW, and okay, it's harder on a national scale. ECW started from a much lower point, and obviously they're not really comparable. But you look at WWF and WCW, for as many positives as they've all had, and we didn't really touch on the WWF negatives, although I think we'll come on to some of those in the awards. For as many positives they've had a lot of negatives that have kind of balanced it out. Hogan has come in, but he's brought a lot of baggage with him. WWF had a lot of great moments, but equally look at like a Luger, Yokozuna, and a guy we didn't even speak about was Undertaker. I don't think he's had a very good year either. And I look at ECW and I think, you've not got the resources, you've not got the talent, you've not got any of this. And yet, week by week, it's not, it's like you're watching some, you're like you're watching something different. It's almost like
a totally
like,
different genre.
Yeah, if you put an episode of Saturday Night and an episode of ECW in front of somebody who'd never heard what wrestling was, they would categorize them differently. They would look at one and the other and go, that's one thing, that's another. And it's all within this fascinating genre that we call wrestling. But ECW have been great. And as I say, I won't go on it too much longer. I've blogged about it often enough. Doug's is fantastic. That's, you know, Heyman's had a great year. Public Enemy have been fantastic. Sam Andreamer was great. All of the above and many, many more. But I think their ability to take guys who just, the guys that I think the WWE and Sabu as well, I should mention him, guys that I think other companies wouldn't really look at and go, nah, he's not quality, he doesn't look right.
I think the easiest way you could probably sum up, Bob, you mentioned about Sandman and Dreamer. You go to your work at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're sitting in the bus, Sandman's easily somebody that you could see walking in a building site. He's just a regular guy. But when you've got that atmosphere, you've got the crowd, the cameras.
Well, we should give him a shovel rather than a Singapore cane, is that what
you're saying? Yeah. I mean, you can see him just clocking off at 4:30 in the afternoon and he's already got the tinny in his bag and he's just drinking it with a fag hanging out his mouth at the side of the road waiting for his boss home. I mean, you can see these guys are just regular guys that are in it, not because they want to make money, dare I say, in ECW. They won't. They're not in it for the glamour, dare I say, in ECW. You don't have glamour either. They're in it because they love it and it comes across in TV. I mean, the easiest way to compare it is WCW and WWF for a lot of the time. It's like watching an old black and white movie for the 20s and the 30s. ECW, ironically, for the lack of technical specs and kind of presentation value that they've got, it's just absolute blaring living technicolour.
As I say, the little bit of ECW that I've seen, at some points, it is a little bit of an overkill of stimulation for the eyes. I did see the Sandman caning and going, how are they getting away with this? And you see some of the guys there, it is the island of misfit toys. These guys, in theory, don't look like wrestlers. But they managed to put on a show. They've got the heart, they've got soul, they've got a desire to do something and be the best they can be. They're not there plodding along like some of the guys do in WWF and WCW.
You can tell that they're working for their money, I think, Chris.
Mm. Colin, they definitely put a shift in.
Yeah. Colin, anything to add quickly?
I don't think it'll ever take off.
Fair enough. All right. We'll move on to the awards. As I said, we've got awards for the following categories. Show of the year, promotion of the year, tag team of the year. This is in order we're going to do them. Some seems a bit otherwise hodgepodge. Non-wrestler of the year, flop slash fail of the year, match of the year, feud of the year, rising star, the best and worst moments, which is kind of a bit more discussion, a bit in the middle. And then I think arguably the three biggest topics, which is wrestler of the year, which is kind of more MVP. We've got a separate category for best worker and the best talker as well. So those are our categories for this evening. The thought about this is that I've got the guys to kind of write down their individual lists. I've kind of said cap it at three, although I have broken that rule once, and match of the year, I said cap it at five. So what we'll do is we'll go around, we'll introduce the category, we'll go around the awards or each nomination from all of us, discuss some of them, and then we'll try and come to a consensus. I'm not desperate to sit here and get to a list because we could be here a while. But just kind of more open up some debate about some other things that we wouldn't have got to in that main, year review part of the show. We will start with the Show of the Year Award. Chris, your nominations.
Bash the Beach, AAA, Worlds Collide, and SummerSlam.
Del.
For me, it's between two. Bob, I've got Spring Stampede for WCW and WrestleMania 10 for WWF. And I don't know whether you'll allow me, but I would actually quite like to nominate, on merit, the ECW Hardcore TV for August the 30th.
Colin.
I've actually just gone for WrestleMania 10.
Okay. Well, Dale, it's funny you should say that because my list literally reads Spring Stampede, WrestleMania 10, and, because I'm going to allow it, the August 30th edition of ECW Hardcore TV. We'll start with WrestleMania 10. Colin, is it because a lot of people look back on this show as two great matches, and quite rightly so. But as an overall show, was this as good as people might put it off to be?
You're definitely going to look at Bret and Owen and Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, when you think of WrestleMania 10. I think as well, though, I mean, I quite enjoyed the build-up and the eventual match between Savage and Crush.
I don't think that was that good. That was disappointing.
I think
that.
The match itself was a bit of a letdown, but the build-up to it, I think, was okay. And it's hard not to get into a Randy Savage match. I mean, he's always so full of energy and he gets the crowd behind him, and it was something a bit different. I mean, I don't think the stipulation was particularly well thought out, but I thought it was entertaining in itself. But I can see why people would focus on the two matches, and it probably does cloud the judgment a little bit, but I think it was a solid show. You had the silly squash match. I think Earthquake squashed Adam Bomb.
Sounds about right.
But I mean, it's WrestleMania. It generally produces, and I think that with those two matches, it really did. And then you had the big title change at the end. Bret finally got given the nod and given the title. Yeah, I liked it.
Plus, it's Bill Clinton approved.
That's true. Oh, boy. Dale, your thoughts on WrestleMania 10? I don't want to be overly harsh on it. I just kind of wanted to make that point.
I'll be honest, Bob, I kind of looked at the category in two ways. It was, for me, my favourite show of the year and also best show of the year. It's the best that's marked WrestleMania down for me. I actually really, really enjoyed the show. I totally agree with Colin. I think as a three-hour show, I thought it really ran smoothly. It's obviously going to be bookended by those two matches, the opener with the Hearts and then that ladder match with Shawn and Razor. But I did think it was a really entertaining show. As I say, the only thing that put me off it was when you kind of look back at the results and watch the show again, it is really hard to look past those two matches. And for me, it was more a case of what's the difference between one match with two five-star matches, one show with two five-star matches, or maybe another show with a good four plus star matches. But for definitely the two matches that were in there with Shawn and Razor, Bret and Owen, you've got the return of Piper, you've got the return of Mr. Perfect, you had moments in there, and it was just a really well-flowing show for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I nominated this show over Survivor Series, but more because of objectiveness than anything else, but I think I probably enjoyed Survivor Series slightly more, just because I thought it was a much better, more even show, and again, I thought they did a great job with Diesel. You can listen to that review in the November show. But WrestleMania was undoubtedly a very good show. We will move on. Where should we go next? Let's go to the AAA show. Dale, you and Chris covered this. Chris, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on that show and its merits as a contender for show of the year?
It was 2.5 hours of just entertainment. Because as Dale was sort of going, I wasn't going on the quote-unquote the best show technically, which every match getting 5 stars, I went on the shows I enjoyed the most. And for that, as someone who's not seen, as I was saying when we were reviewing it, I'd seen a little bit of Lucha on channel on ITV, but never seen a proper full show. Other than the confusion with some of the rules, everything in the match, everything was entertaining with it. You know, it was great seeing new sort of style of wrestling, and everything was fast-paced. There was no need for long promos or any sort of vignettes or anything, because it sort of explained itself. It was just fun.
Dale?
I really agree with Chris there, to be honest, Bob. It was just totally different. You just, everything. I mean, you'd a main event with Perry Aguayo in it, with, I think the man's 46, 47-year-old. And then you go back to earlier in the evening, you'd a six-man tags with Rey Mysterio Jr., Psicosis. I think there were about 19 and 20, maybe 21 each. And I mean, it really captured everything from young guys to old veterans. You'd great tag team matches in it. And I mean, as Chris said, there wasn't a lot of bells and whistles with it. There was no vignettes, no kind of large promo or audio pieces for the audience. It really was all about having a squared circle in the ropes, telling stories. The commentators done a great job with Chris Cruz and Mike Denae talking over it. And for something just totally different, really enjoyable show.
Now let's talk about Spring Stampede. This was my favourite show of the year, in terms of, I can't ever recall, and this is probably why when we were discussing about WrestleMania 10, I kind of said, well, it really is just a two-match show. Part of the reason I say that is just to kind of better explain why I'm voting for Spring Stampede is that as a three-hour wrestling show, there wasn't a bad match on this card.
Yeah.
And there were, I mean, I think I undercut it when I perhaps say there were three excellent matches on this show.
I've marked four, and I actually thought I was undercutting it a wee bit as well.
No, there was four. You're right. Yeah, no, because I even forgot about Vader and the Boss, which was Boss one of my favourite matches of the year. I mean, none of them quite hit the heights of the ladder match, Shawn and Razor, but the Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan.
Kevin Sullivan, yeah.
Was it Max Payne? I mixed those two up.
I think it may have been Max Payne.
It was, yeah. Kevin Sullivan was Kevin Sullivan was the next month. That match, in terms of brutality and in terms of a weapon style match, which arguably is good, although very much in a different way. Vader versus the Boss. You need to be into that kind of super heavyweight style of match, but I am. And
well,
that
I'm
was
actually going to counteract you there, Bob. I'm not. And I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was a brilliant match. I know you're a big fan of the super heavyweights going toe-to-toe. I am not, not normally, but I actually really enjoyed it. I think it got in there and made it.
And then you've got the Bunkhouse match between Bunkhouse Buck and Dustin Rhodes, which was just like a hardcore type match. Excellent. And then a main event and you know, the kind of match that I think Chris would have watched and really enjoyed was the Steamboat Flair match, which was, I thought this show just had everything. I kind of thought it's one of those things we talk about wrestling being a variety and kind of catering to different audiences. I thought, as you kind of say, I thought this was a kind of show that had ticked all the boxes, but equally it wasn't something where you had to be into something. And I thought this was, and this is why I kind of talk about pre and post Hogan. This was the peak of the pre stuff. It was just a phenomenal show. Tell your overall thoughts.
I totally agree with you, Bob. As I say, going back to WrestleMania, it was really the two matches and then, oh yeah, there was like another four or five on the card. This one, you can easily just pick out any match, stick it on a Saturday night and you would watch it and you would think it's great. I mean, you've got Flair Steamboat, two legends of the business. They've worked in the 80s, they still work in the 90s. You've got young Dustin Rhodes going in there, and I think Bunkhouse Buck at the time had debuted, what, 2-3 weeks prior to the show, if memory serves. The Nasties and Cactus and that tag match was decent. It was really good. Boss Invader was great again. I mean, it's very rare that you get one show that runs for less than 3 hours that's got that much high quality in it. But it doesn't drain you out either. I thought it was just a magnificent wrestling show.
Chris, let's talk about your other two suggestions. SummerSlam I thought was a bit of an odd suggestion, given how badly it ended.
Take away that the Undertaker match, and it's a really good show.
But can you take it away in a discussion about Show of the Year? I'm not saying you're necessarily going to nominate it, but...
I can. I turn it off after Bret and Owen.
The feet cut it.
Yeah.
I don't think we can discuss that seriously just because it wasn't, I don't think it was a great show up to that point. It was very good, but I don't think it was exceptional. And what was the second best match on that card?
I really liked the Diesel and Razor match. The women's match was great as well.
Yeah.
With Alandra and Nakano. The opener was a good pace. It was the Head Shrinkers and the Guns. Good match all the way through. Just the main event that was let down.
I mean, you're right. It's a very enjoyable show to that point. And the women's match certainly wasn't something we had time to discuss, but that was very good. And I think I remember talking about it at the time, just saying, the crowd were way more into that than they had any right to be. But I think in terms of an overall show, just the main event was so bad, it just dragged the whole thing down. Bash at the Beach, I think it's, go on Chris, explain your reasoning behind that. I think that's far more agreeable, I would say.
The fact Hogan and Flair delivered as a main event for one thing was good, but the rest of that card was quite good as well. You had the tag match with Dustin. I can't remember who he was teaming with, but it was against Bunkhouse Buck and
it was Arn Anderson, wasn't it?
That was the Arn match, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They had the dodgy turn at the end with the DDT. Really good match. You had Austin and Steamboat had a classic. Good match all the way through, and a main event that amazingly delivered to the hype.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really speak about it, but I thought that match was epic in terms of that was about as good as it was ever going to get between those two. I don't think they could have had a better match. Now, again, it wasn't a five-star classic, but, you know, Hogan's rarely going to be involved in those kind of matches, if at all. It was about as good as it was going to get. That's certainly, I think, more worthy of the award. Del, the other one, we better not spend 15 minutes on each category. But Del, the other one I think we need to speak about quickly, I mean, I don't think we can really put it forward necessarily because it was only 40 minutes long, effectively. But that ECW show is easily the best TV show of the year.
Well, that's it. I mean, what we're really looking for here, Bob, show of the year, it's to encapsulate everything that's good about a product with an eye to looking forward to the future. ECW August the 30th, it showed the hardcore side of it, it showed the storytelling side of it. It basically just summed up what they had, the name change, the violence, just the bells and whistles that ECW has delivered for 6 months, all encapsulated in 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, just to be illustrative, it was the Sandman Dreamer Singapore Kane segment on that show, and it was also the NWA title tournament thing as well. So if you can find that show, very much go out of your way to watch that.
Yeah.
Colin, we know what you're voting for. Chris, what are you in with?
I'm going to go Bash as the my pick of the year.
Del?
Purely based on a pay-per-view, Bob, has to be Spring Stampede for me.
No, I'm with you on that. Not the WrestleMania was bad, it was very good, but I think just in terms of a 3-hour show that had four exceptional matches. And I think we'll say we'll be official honor nomination if we can come to a majority vote, so we will award Spring Stampede our show of the year. Certainly a more brief one this time round. Promotion of the year, Chris.
ECW.
Colin.
I still can't decide. I'm going to go with WWF just because I'm a WWF guy.
Del?
Again, ECW for me, Bob.
ECW. I don't think we need to discuss that, I think, for all the reasons in the first hour of the show. We will move on. This could be a lot of fun. Tag Team of the Year. Colin?
I'm split between two. I've got the Steiners or the Nasty Boys.
Chris?
Public Enemy, Max Payne and Cactus Jack, and the Steiners.
Del?
Main one's got to be between two for me, Bob, and I think it's probably one that we may come to blows on. Public Enemy and Nasty Boys, with also an honourable mention for La Parade del Terror, Eddie Guerrero and Art Bar for AAA.
Yeah. Colin, I'm intrigued by the Steiners, not because they're not great, but just because they barely featured this year.
Yeah, but what they did do, they did well. They're a solid tag team that...
What did they do this year?
What did they do this year? They were tag champions, weren't they?
No.
Am I thinking back to 93?
Yeah, it was the Quebecers, and then they dropped it to the 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty. That went back to the Quebecers, and the Steiners left. And then I think it went to Sean and Diesel after that, I think. Maybe
right,
the Head Shrinkers.
I'll stick with the Nasty Boys then.
Okay. Chris, anything further on the Steiners? I, again, not to be critical of the Steiners, I just don't think they featured enough this year to be worthy of the nomination.
I just thought they had a little bit more at the beginning of the year. Clearly, it was the end of last year.
Yeah.
So I remember them having some good matches with the Quebecers and stuff, but it must have been at the arse end of last year, not the beginning of this year.
That's okay. Let's talk about the Nasty Boys, though.
On you go, Bob.
All right, I'll talk about them. For me, and we're going to come to it in a bit with Match of the Year, as much as the Nasty Boys are quite one-dimensional, very, you might say, as much as they're quite limited, very much you might say, that they're of the five best matches of the year, I've got the Nasty Boys involved in two of them.
Right.
And that's not to say they only had two great matches. They had some other very good matches at times this year. But I think they made a lot out of being given very little. They had a very good match at Super Brawl back in February.
Yeah.
But those two matches in April and May are about as good as it got this year for anyone anywhere. And we're gonna come to blows on whether it should be there on the Public Enemy, I think. But I think in terms of just hitting the heights with what they were given, I think they're a home run bet. And I've gone to and fro on this. Dale, what do you think?
I think, to be honest, Bob, when we talk about the Public Enemy and the Nasty Boys, there are actually a lot of similarities. Neither of them are going to be in GQ magazine anytime soon. There are a lot of detractors that would maybe say, yep, they are pretty one-dimensional. But as you say, taking the core products that they have at their mercy, they absolutely make the most of it. The Nasty Boys had a strong heel run at the start of the year. We were both dubious when they talked about turning them face. They delivered on it. There was the spot of the year for you at the Halloween Havoc with the pumpkin ending with the pile driver. They do funny, they do good. The matches, as you say, in April and May were superb for tag team wrestling. They definitely had a great year, and as I say, for each promotion, maybe WWF aside, there's not a lot of nominees for them, but for ECW, there's only one tag team. For WCW, there's only one tag team. There are a lot of similarities there. Could well be that it's just a subjective finish for who we both prefer.
Chris, thoughts on the Nasty Boys?
They do what the Nasty Boys have done, but it's got a new lease of life in WCW. You know, as I said, I like the Public Enemy from the sort of the short amount that I've seen of them. They are the Nasty Boys, but younger and a little bit more hip hop. I'd quite like to see a match between the two of them.
Yeah,
that could be interesting.
Because I think the Nasty Boys would be an absolute riot in ECW, because that's the walking brawl style that they're so good at. And one of the things we saw in June was when they kind of got the legs cut out from under them, when WCW said, "Oh, we don't want any more violence." And I mean, that, who knows what year they could have had that not been the case.
But yeah, for the beginning of the year, they have lightened up a tag division, which has been pretty terrible this year. As a whole, tag team wrestling in 94 has not had its best year. There's been very little. The Public Enemy and the Nasties have both been shining lights in an otherwise gloomy sea.
Colin, who did you nominate again? I've got Public Enemy's Nasty Boys, Steiners and Guerrero. Are there any others?
Yeah, I went for the Steiners, and then we realised again that it was the arse end of last year. But yeah, I had the Nasty Boys.
Chris, who did you have?
Max Payne and Cactus, Public
That's
Enemy.
That's right. Oh, that was the other one. Dal, let's talk about the Public Enemy.
Again, really similar to the Nasties, Bob. I've never made any bones about it. I really am a Public Enemy guy. You brought me on board mid-year. Started getting into ECW. And the Public Enemy, to be quite honest, didn't do anything for me at all. But throughout the end of the year, much like ECW with the end that they've had, they do funny. You'll see them in either backstage skits or even on location, whether it's them giving you a tour in New York City or the hood that they're from. They do bring that hip hop style to a 90s generation that Chris was talking about as well. The matches that they've had with Cactus, whether it's been with Kevin Sullivan that one month, the matches with Mikey Whipwreck, or even at the end of the year with Tommy Dreamer getting involved as well. Again, they've had face runs, they've had heel runs, the brawling's as good as you're going to see. There's big moments that they're involved in, whether it was going back to Cactus and Funk with the chairs getting thrown in mid-year, or even with the stuff run about the arena way, kind of getting thrown off the stage, and we've got the bit in the ring at the end of this, I think it was beginning of last month or end of last month, where we've got the situation with pretty much everybody in the ECW locker room out in the ring, and the Public Enemy come out on top, including Paulie Dangerously, Sabu, Taz, all in there. I just think they've had an amazing end to the year, and I think the one thing that pushes them, well, maybe two actually, two things that push them for me personally over the nasties is a lot of nasty stuff we've seen in WWF. It can be a little bit early 90s, even late 80s at points, but the Public Enemy seems a lot fresher. And for me, there's been a really strong development on promos. Rocco Rock carrying a lot of the work, but even Johnny Grunge coming in at the end of the year as well. Nasty Boys have kind of just, I think the only one promo that kind of sticks it to me was the bit when Dusty goes into the bar to find them, to get them recruited. The Public Enemy seem to deliver it every week. They can do funny, they can do serious. And for me, they would be the winners.
Yeah. I think to wrap this up, I mean, I think Max Payne and Cactus Jack will be very much in a similar mould for what the Nasty Boys were, given that they were kind of in that feud, really, although Max Payne and Cactus Jack didn't end up wrestling the third one. Apparently, that was, I was under the impression that that was Kevin Sullivan replacing Max Payne. Apparently, it was Cactus Jack replacing Dave Sullivan. Apparently, that was the story behind that one, for what that's worth. And Guerrero and Art Barr, not to... to really kind of put a down on them, just more that we only saw them for one show. And
yep, as I say, Bob, just an honourable mention for them. The one show that stands out, as Chris reviewed earlier on, is the AAA show, but digging out some tapes, if you can get a hold of them, a really strong rivalry with Octagon and Masquerita. But as I say, it's definitely between the two big guys for me.
Colin, your nomination or your winner in this category?
I'm going with the Nasties.
Del?
Enemy.
Chris?
Enemy.
We have a tie. Nasty Boys as well. We'll call that a split decision, I think. But yeah, but both incredibly worthy of being in the discussion. I mean, I think that I'd say about the Nasty Boys, and Chris make a very good point. I'd love to see this itineration of the Nasty Boys in ECW, because the Nasty Boys for me have been so great within a much more constrained system. And I don't think if Public Enemy transition into WCW, they get even 5% of the opportunity they'd be given in ECW to showcase what they can do. But again, very much, I would say, both teams are worthy of the award.
I think it's a perfect end for that, Bob, yeah.
We'll call it shared. We'll certainly will. And we'll move on next to the Non-Wrestler of the Year Award. This is basically anyone, announcer, manager, me and Gene Oakland, anything else really in any kind of category that doesn't fit into in-ring performer. Chris, your nomination for Non-Wrestler of the Year?
There's only one, and it's Paulie Dangerously.
Del?
Art Donovan. Or Paulie.
How much does that guy weigh?
Colin?
Bobby Heenan.
Just Bobby Heenan?
Just Bobby Heenan.
Seriously, how the hell have none of you nominated Century of Sherry for this award?
That's a good shout, actually.
I had Paulie Dangerously in third and nobody in second, just to be illustrative of how much you should win this award by. But no, we'll come to that in a minute. Del, let's start with Art Donovan, because we must talk about this, even though that was a very much a sarcastic shout, I hope. I don't know, maybe you were just entertained by him so much.
Oh, no, Art Donovan for me. Just kind of sums up the year, Bob. I mean, we can bring in these guys for outside fields. It gets kind of different eyes in the product. Art Donovan was obviously localised to the show he was on at King of the Ring, but this is just how not to do it. You put him out there, totally exposed. It's all right doing a 5-minute, kind of come in the ring, have a wave, maybe talk, go away. That's that. But Art just stayed and stayed and stayed, and it was just painful.
Colin, any more on Art Donovan?
How much does this guy weigh? Is any more needed from Art Donovan, really? I don't think there'll be many people asking for more on Art Donovan.
To fit in on the Art Donovan thing, just in case you didn't listen to the June show, Art Donovan was an NFL player brought in to be a commentator on the King of the Ring show because he was local to the area they were in. And he was horrendous. I'd say, like, we do it in full in the June show. You kind of want to go back on that. And it is worth going over because it was a nadir for the WWF in 94. But just bringing in a guy who doesn't follow the product, doesn't know who any of the guys are, wasn't even a very good announcer. You could not know about wrestling and still come across as a very good announcer. You ask the right questions and intuit things in the right way. But he didn't. And how much Yoko's in a way, I've no idea. I'm sure Art Donovan was told many times that I like the idea that he's watching it at home and just asking his family how much people weigh. But we'll move on to some perhaps more serious nominations. Colin, Bobby Heenan.
I wish that Bobby Heenan could commentate on every wrestling ever.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
He's insightful when he needs to be insightful, but more often than not, he's the comedic relief when it's desperately needed. He's so quick-witted, so funny, but when he needs to be, he's on point and getting across what needs to get be put across. And I just wish he was everywhere.
No, plus, perhaps he's got the finest blazer collection in North America.
Oh, the rhinestone BH on his blazers and some of the designs on him are fantastic.
I mean, he's so good. I mean, if you can get hold of like any episode of WCW Main Event this year, and a lot of WCW Main Event is basically in-ring action, and then we have various interspersed segments of Heenan and Mean Gene Oakland just talking in a studio. That's the kind of format of that show. Heenan's so good there, and he's so good on commentary, and he's so good everywhere else. He has been one of the true stars of WCW this year. And I probably undercut him by not nominating him. But yeah, no, I think he's completely right. Chris, your thoughts on Heenan?
Thinking about it, he should definitely be in there. Probably the best commentator that's been all year, other than obviously Art, because Art was just fantastic. But yeah, commentary wise, it has to be said, the best guy of the year.
Yeah. Dale, let's talk about Paulie Dangerously.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all come in here really with one winner. Bob, I come in with Paulie as well as Chris. You come in with Sherry, and then Collins come out with a blinder and Bobby Heenan in it. I think it's tantamount to, I don't think there's really anybody else that would come close with these three. I mean, they all brought something different, but for me, it had to be Paulie Dangerously just for what he brought to that product. I mean, it's really a phoenix that's risen through the ashes as of August of this year, and without Paul Heyman, the booker, or Paulie Dangerously, the character, I've actually given him it for both, because the matches that have been booked there with the angles and just the momentous occasions on TV has came from the mind of Paul Heyman, the booker, and the character Paulie Dangerously on TV is just as good a talker as you're going to see. He builds guys up. There's nothing that takes any shots at making guys seem weak in any way, whether it's maybe a rival. He talks crowds into the arenas. Anybody that he works with, whether it's a 911 is just a pure muscle guy. Sabu, just an enigma that never talks. Paulie just brings up everybody that he works with.
No, I completely agree. And some of his promos are absolutely phenomenal. And one guy I don't think you mentioned, Dale, is Sabu, who Paulie manages in ECW. And Sabu's never talked. He's never done anything out of the ECW. They've never done any non-wrestling segment with Sabu. And yet Sabu's one of their biggest stars because Paulie's so good.
Because of Paulie, yeah.
Because he's his mouthpiece and his manager. And yeah, I still think Sherry should win this by distance, and we'll come to her in a minute, but he's been excellent this year. No doubt about that. We have to move on to Sensuous Sherry, and I'm shocked that none of you came up with that name, just because she's been unbelievable this year in terms of, one, the fact when you look at she's been paired with firstly Shane Douglas, then Ric Flair, and obviously now Harlem Heat similarly. And she's been with great acts for very good reasons. Secondly, in that she's enhanced everyone she's been with. And it's not like Flair needed a mouthpiece or anything like that. It's not like Shane Douglas needed a mouthpiece or a manager. Harlem Heat probably do. But she's been there because she's enhanced both of those acts, or all three of them. And I think her involvement with Flair, I mean, so Colin, she was bumping more than probably 90% of the WCW roster at various points during this year.
Yeah, I mean, some of the bumps she took while she was with Flair was just insane. Stuff that the guys would have been proud of. I can understand why you're so high on her. I wouldn't argue too much against her either. But if you wanted to be pedantic about things, technically she is a wrestler.
She's not wrestled in one match this year.
No, I agree with you, but technically she is a wrestler playing the role of a manager. That's probably why I didn't think of her, because that's the way my stupid brain works.
Yeah, I don't think that penitentiary is going to get through. But we'll see. All right, Chris, your winner in this category.
Seeing that you've spoke well of her, Sherry, she's now definitely a second. She's a definite number two, but I'm still going with Heyman / Paulie because of his creative idea to make this thing that has become ECW.
Del.
Again, never thought of Heenan, brilliant shout. Never thought of Sherry, brilliant shout, but still for me, it's got to be Paulie.
Colin.
I'm going with Heenan.
And I'm going with Sherry. So that makes Paulie dangerously, and very much a worthy winner of non-wrestling act of the year. That's, again, I thought Sherry was fantastic, but I think one thing I think that I probably never thought about this was more non-wrestler in a kind of off-screen role. And I think when you consider Paulie's role in the rise of ECW, yeah, if you look at it from that angle, then certainly he's probably the far and away the winner. This one's going to be fun. Flop / fail of 1994. Chris, your nominations.
Undertaker versus Undertaker and Lex Luger.
Del.
The three for me, Bob, is the WWF quote-unquote legends that came in through the year. The three faces of Fear Faction and WCW and Bret Hart quote-unquote WWF champion.
Colin.
I've got The Undertaker versus Undertaker, Piper Lawler main event King of the Ring, and that's all I've got to do.
Okay, well, I've actually added, I've got four, actually. I've added one in the time we've been recording. In no particular order, my nominations for Flop Fan of the Year, one, Lex Luger. Two, I've just got Undertaker, actually, and that includes the Taker match, but also just other parts of his year. Also, particularly the Royal Rumble match in January and all that. Honky Tonk Man, just awful. I mean, just awful. And my late addition to, proceedings, and we could be here a while discussing all this, was actually the King of the Ring pay-per-view as a whole. Art Donovan combined with the, logic defying Owen Hart 1-2-3 kid match combined with the inexplicable, Lex Luger, inexplicable, Piper Lawler main event. All bad. We've got some discussing. Let's start with specifically Undertaker. We'll talk about Taker more in a minute. Chris, I'll come to you first on that one.
The build up, I liked. I liked the whole, where is he? The mystery spotting. Million Dollar Man saying that he had his Undertaker. Paul Bearer coming out saying no, he had the true Undertaker. And then that match happened, and it's burnt into my retinas and was in my memory forever.
Worth saying that the bit right up until the match. Well, all right, there was a shenanigans with the whatever it was, the investigation.
Leslie Nielsen.
That's the super sleuth, which
Leslie
was.
Leslie Nielsen.
But the introduction to that match, the bit where the real Undertaker comes out and you've got Bearer and you've got the bigger and all that, that was phenomenal. But the match was just horrendous. I mean, it's the great Vince McMahon line. The crowd are in awe. No, they're not.
The crowd are in bore.
Yeah, I'll say it. Colin?
Yeah. The Undertaker versus Undertaker. I actually quite liked the Where's the Undertaker, the sightings, the people saying, I saw the Undertaker buying a sandwich or whatever it was.
Oh, that was great.
But when they brought on Leslie Nielsen and the Super Sleuth thing, it started to die its death there. And you had the slight peak when Paul Bearer introduced the real Undertaker at SummerSlam, but otherwise awful, absolutely awful.
Literally the only positive I can take from that match itself was that it wasn't as long as it perhaps could have been. I think it was only about 8 or 9 minutes, and I think they had some time cut due to Bret and Owen overrunning, but I mean, if that had been 15 minutes, like that could have been like horrendous. As it was terrible. And my other favourite part about this whole Undertaker thing was specifically they were building this story with the idea that the fake Undertaker was the real one. All those videos we saw of people sighting of the Undertaker was supposedly the real one. And the idea was, what the hell's this? Now, obviously, that was the fake one. But because they had to announce the main event they had to, they announced the main event about 5-6 weeks before SummerSlam, I think. And yet they hadn't even told the story of there being two Undertakers. That was hilarious. Just like, yeah, we're the main event at SummerSlam is Undertaker versus Undertaker. And you rewind 1 week and you've got Paul Bearer convinced that the fake Undertaker's the real one. That was an amazing piece of work. And then they kind of worked backwards just because they had to announce the main event. It's not like they didn't have another match on that card. I don't know, maybe Bret Hart versus Owen Hart for the WWF title that could have headlined that show. Let's talk about Undertaker more generally in the year. I mean, I kind of nominate him as much for his actions elsewhere. I mean, that Royal Rumble title match, Yokozuna, what an utter mess.
I'm totally in agreement with you, Bob. I don't think we can even look at this as just that one match in the summer. I think it's got to be the Undertaker over the full year. And I mean, by no means is it an indictment on the man himself. I mean, he's really over with the crowd. He's got that championship that he won a couple of years ago. His entrance is still as good as pretty much anything you're going to see in the business. But as a year, it's certainly a forgettable one. I mean, that match at Rumble, as you say, was awful. We've then got a five, six month absence. You've got the main event that we've spoke about at SummerSlam. I mean, even the uncommon rivalry with Bundy, with the looks, it really leaves me uninspired. I mean, it's just been a really, really forgettable year for somebody that should really be up there in this new generation as somebody that the fans can get behind. Just a total blank for the calendar. I think we just need to skip to 95 and hope for the best for the big man.
Yeah, I mean, he's still one of the most popular guys they've got. And we, you know, maybe the Undertaker character is too out there to be considered a number one guy, but I think in discussions of the next number one guy, I don't know why Undertaker perhaps didn't feature more. Perhaps it's just because he's, again, it's too much of a box character that you can't really put into the mainstream, but I don't know why he wasn't necessarily a guy they could have gone with. Mm-hmm. We'll rattle through some of these. Colin, we kind of discussed the Luger thing earlier, but I think in terms of the true nature of the flop fail of the year, I mean, Luger's the biggest flop as they come. And not necessarily his fault, but it came into the year still as a guy who I think they had hopes of being the guy. And ended the year almost nothing, really.
Yeah, I think the nail in Luger's coffin was WrestleMania. I think he's been... I think the feud with Tatanka has just been, I think, so badly done. I mean, Tatanka's been a face since he's been in the WWF. He had the long undefeated run. I think was ended by Ludwig Borger, wasn't it, last year? And yeah. I mean, I can't take Tatanka as a heel at all. I mean, it just doesn't work for me. And you've got the already stuttering Lex Luger, then put into this heel feud with Tatanka. No, it's not worked at all. I mean, he's gone from being the guy that isn't the guy against the guy that shouldn't be a heel. I think he's doomed, really doomed.
Who nominated Legends in WWF? Is that you, Chris?
That was me, Bob.
Oh, go on, Dale.
The main reason I've done that, we've got the King of the Ring main event with Piper and Lawler. We've got Bob Backlund prior to the situation occurring with him. But, I mean, we're talking about a new generation. As much as Backlund made the most of the TV time he's got, it's 1994. I mean, you've got King Kong Bundy coming in with Ivan Koloff early in the year with Ted DiBiase, and you've got Savage sitting at ringside doing absolutely nothing. I just thought it was a total waste of the names that they could have used and just how they've just not built anything into the product at all for me.
Dale, you went on Three Faces of Fear as well, weren't you?
Yeah, Three Faces of Fear, pretty similar to the situation in New York with this one, just three random D-listers, just an absolute shambles of a faction. I mean, there isn't really a strong promo between them. I mean, Kevin Sullivan looks decent, but compared to what he's up with the mic, I think one of us could quite easily slot into that role and probably deliver it as good as Kevin Sullivan as well. No heat with the crowd. The matches don't fill me with confidence, as we've seen at Starrcade, and hopefully not into the new year as well, but there's just nothing there for me out of them.
Yeah, to rattle through the others, and we've got Bret as champion. We discussed that earlier in the show. Piper and Lawler kind of comes into the Legends thing as well. King of the Ring was what I nominated. Again, there were just so many things in that I thought were awful. And Honky Tonk Man, who just maybe illustrative of the fails in WCW this year, but Honky Tonk Man just offers nothing. And he's gone now. He's not in WCW anymore. And I, you know, I don't think they're ever going to hire him back anytime soon. So that might be the last I'll see of him, thankfully. Chris, your winner in this category?
Undertaker.
Del?
Undertaker in general for me, Bob.
Colin?
I've got Undertaker.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We'll nominate the match itself because I think that was probably illustrative of the point, but not a home run year for Undertaker either. Right, match of the year. This should be fun. Chris, your nominations, perhaps in order if you've got them. No, actually, just in any order.
Bret Owen, Mania 10. Bret Owen, SummerSlam. Bret 1-2-3 Kid, the match on Raw. Shawn and Razor at Mania 10. And Benoit, Scorpio and Tito versus La Parca, Jerry Estrada and Blue Panther at AAA.
What was your, was it Brett and the Kid, was it the other one?
Yeah.
Right, Brett and the Kid and the AAA match. Del?
For me, I've got, in no order, Bob, we've got Shawn and Razor, WrestleMania 10, Kid and Owen, King of the Ring, Hogan and Flair at Bash of the Beach, Brett and Owen at WrestleMania 10, and also Brett and Owen at SummerSlam.
Shawn and Razor, Hogan and Flair, what was the other one?
Hogan Flair, Shawn and Razor, two Bret Owen matches, and then the 1-2-3 Kid and Owen Hart for the King
That's
of the
right.
Ring, booking aside.
Sorry, I'm trying to write these down, so I'm going back through them. Colin?
I've got Bret Owen, WrestleMania 10, Bret Owen, SummerSlam, HBK, Razor, WrestleMania 10, Bret 1-2-3 Kid on Raw, and I've got HBK versus 1-2-3 Kid on Raw as well.
Okay, what match was that?
I think it was early in the year.
Okay, I don't stick out in my mind, but fair enough. My nominations in no particular order: Sabu versus Shane Douglas versus Terry Funk from ECW in February of this year. Nominating separately both of the Cactus Jack Nasty Boys tag matches, one from Spring Stampede and one from Slamboree. Nominating Vader against the Boss and nominating Shawn and Razor. Could be a while with all this. And again, not to say I didn't like the Bret and Owen matches, I just favoured these matches more. Chris, let's take Bret and Owen as a whole. Those two matches specifically, I know we spoke about them earlier. Your thoughts on those?
Both were perfectly paced, proper wrestling matches. Sort of chain wrestling in both. Both sort of good timing. The cage match, they made a 30-minute cage match seem like it didn't sort of seem as that long. Time went by so well. Yeah, everything those two did together was just like perfect this year.
Colin, same topic?
Yeah, much what Chris said, I think they were perfectly placed, perfectly paced, technically brilliant. They didn't really put a foot wrong in either match. I'm not a massive fan of cage matches, but the SummerSlam cage match, I quite happily watched and would watch over and over again.
Del?
Again, I think you're on your own here, Bob. I think the three of us, perfect agreement. Great matches. We've seen it at Mania. It was kind of stripped back. No smoke and mirrors. Just a one-on-one technical masterclass. Really, really built a star of Owen. And then again, we've seen it going for the one-on-one in the ring to having a gimmick match at SummerSlam. Again, with Colin, I'm not a great fan of the steel cage, especially when it's the escape only step. But I thought they worked well with the constraints. There was good end with the Hearts at the kind of building up the drama with them coming in at the end. I thought it was as good a cage match as you've seen. I think the two of them really were standouts.
Colin, talk to me about the 1-2-3 Kid series of matches. You got HBK, you got Brett, and then I think Del nominated the one from King of the Ring. Colin.
Yep, I keep putting mute on by accident.
Ah, okay.
I think the HBK and 1-2-3 Kid match was in the lead up to WrestleMania, I believe.
Right.
It was very fast paced. Kept the crowd entertained, kept me entertained. I think they went about 10-12 minutes. And it was a perfect viewing of two guys that, given the time and the right push, could very well go to the stars in the WWF. Then you had the 1-2-3 kid against Bret Hart, which it's a young guy in the kid who proved that he can hang with someone as technically gifted as Bret Hart. It was, I think it's quite a good pairing.
Yeah, and I think what more to add to that match was that because it was in July, Jim Ross was on that call. And Jim Ross has been rehired by the WWF this month, and I'm very surprised that it's not in an announcing capacity. That's not to say he can't deliver more backstage, but Vince McMahon and Jim Ross are incomparable on commentary. You know, they're at opposite ends of the scale, and Jim Ross certainly enhanced that match. He is. Dale, I've got a bonus pick with you about this 1-2-3 kid.
I can imagine, Bob, but I'm going to start this one from the moment the bell rang. I'm taking it for the own baseball slide through the ropes onto the kid, and the kid never walked down the aisle. There was no drama before it with Jeff Jarrett. It was just 3.5 minutes, non-stop, technical wrestling, high flying. I just loved it for what it was. I thought it really showcased the new generation perfectly.
Dale, which Triple A match did you nominate?
The other one that I've got in, Bob, aside for the Bret Owen and the Kid match, was Hogan Flair at Bash of the Beach. Chris talked about it earlier. It was a big match feel. It really shouldn't have delivered with the hype that it got. I mean, we're really talking a match that's years in the making with the NWA and the WWF, but it really delivered for me. It felt like a big match. Hogan actually hung with Flair wrestling. Both of them looked strong, and it just showed why the two of them are the biggest wrestlers in the country at the minute. I thought it was a great match.
And did you nominate a Triple A match?
Was that Chris?
Oh, go on. Which match was that, Chris?
Benoit, Two Cold Scorpio and Tito Santana versus La Parca, Jerry Estrada and Blue Panther. This, to me, was just sort of epitomised everything that was great about that show, because you had Benoit and Scorpio, just amazing technical wrestling. You had Blue Panther, Jerry Estrada and La Parca all in fighting, yet trying to fight the other guys, and for having zero knowledge of any of the story or anything that was going into it. This whole the whole match had its own story. There was in fighting, and it encapsulated everything. It was great in-ring work, great storytelling, and just seeing some of these guys was amazing. And the Parca is just really cool.
Yeah. And to quick rattle through my nominations, which was significantly different from all of yours, I had the pair of the Cactus Jack Nasty Boys tag matches from May and April. Both great. I mean, both wars in many ways, slightly different matches, but both essentially kind of tornado tag team hardcore matches, I think you probably describe them as. Vader and the Boss, we spoke about, was an excellent super heavyweight match. One match we didn't really discuss when talking about ECW was the triple threat, Sabu, Douglas and Terry Funk from February. And not, you know, an hour long time limit draw, a ballsy move in itself. Not a phenomenal, like, if you were to watch 5 minutes of it, I don't think you'd go, wow, what an amazing 5 minutes. It wasn't that kind of match. It was just more how to tell a story of a wrestling match over an hour, make everyone look strong and in an atmosphere that was perfect for it. But the one match we're coming to last, and it's my match of the year, and we'll see whether you guys concur. And we discussed this to a point, but I think we need to give it a bit more time now, is Shawn and Razor. Chris, talk to me about this ladder match.
It was amazing. It was just that thing of seeing guys doing stuff off a ladder, the giant splashing, the using the ladder as a weapon, yet doing it in a way that looked safe and there was no sort of over violence with it. Both of them being nearly getting the belts. It was just sort of great storytelling, great timing, and I can see these two being the future of the WWF, going for the world title. It has to be said that if you put The Rock on these two, the company's good.
Colin.
It was such an innovation. You try to put into words how good this match is. They used the ladder in ways that you'd never seen done before. I mean, there's been ladder matches before, I think I remember a ladder match between Brett and Shawn Michaels.
I think it was Superstars in 92, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was something like 19, I say it's 92 or 93, early 93. And it was absolutely nothing compared to what Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon did at WrestleMania. It was so entertaining, so innovative. It's changed the ladder match forever. Everything now that has a ladder involved is going to have to try to get to that level. They've set the bar extremely high for the future.
Yeah, I mean, literally my only criticism of this match was that perhaps the follow-up after WrestleMania kind of wasn't all that, given how good the match was. They didn't build it up, and I know Shawn kind of went away for a while, which probably didn't help. But I doubt we heard your thoughts on this earlier. I mean, this was just a phenomenal match with, you know, Shawn doing some mental bumps. Razor held up his own as well, and a really good finish. And just the kind of match that when you're thinking ladder match, like, you just weren't expecting that. And that's, yeah, they're going to do that match again. I'm actually quite surprised we haven't kind of had any inkling towards that match since. So I would have thought in the next couple of years we'll get a ladder match, whether it's
yeah,
Shawn,
I think it's
again,
got to be a lock, Bob. These two guys of the future, as Chris says, as Colin says, it's something that we've never seen used in this way before. The easiest way we can sum this up is, if you've not seen it, go and watch it, and we could talk all night about it. But these guys are definitely the future. The gimmick of the ladder itself, I think this is something that will just grow arms and legs, and hopefully it can even just come close to replicating this in the future. We'll be happy.
Chris, your nomination for your winner of Match of the Year?
Brett Owen, Mania 10.
Del?
Shawn Razor.
Colin?
Shawn Razor.
I'm making a hat-trick for Shawn and Razor. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm being slightly harsh, perhaps not nominating Brett and Owen in any of my matches, but I think more just kind of preference more than anything else. But those two had a great run. But that Shawn and Razor match is, I think, quite rightly our Match of the Year. We'll move on to Feud of the Year. Chris, your nominations?
Hogan and Flair, Brett and Owen, and Sandman and Dreamer.
Del?
Just the two for me, Bob. Similar to Chris, Brett and Owen, WWF, Sandman, Dreamer, ECW.
Colin?
Two for me. I've got Brett and Owen, and I've got Razor HBK.
I have the first three, Hogan and Flair, Brett and Owen, Sandman and Dreamer, and honourable mentions, not including my nominations, but for Cactus Jack and the Nasty Boys, and Shane Douglas versus Terry Funk. Colin, we'll start with Razor and Shawn. I mean, it feels weird calling this a feud, but I think it is worthy in that feud kind of built into WrestleMania, and then if you intertwine Diesel with it, kind of continued throughout up until really, well, Survivor Series, I guess, because they were on opposing sides of that match.
Yeah, the team's still not a bad guy, yeah.
So kind of, yeah, a feud that kind of ran year long, even though almost like the WrestleMania match was so good, you kind of can't really compare the rest of it. But Colin, your thoughts on that feud?
I think it was it's arguably the best build into WrestleMania that they had for any match. I've got images of Shawn Michaels hitting the Razor's Edge on the aisleway on Raw onto Razor Ramon. And I think the promos, the selective run-ins, and like you say afterwards, it helped build Razor and Diesel into a feud in itself. Going down the line, I think it was one of the better things that WWF did this year.
Chris, talks about Hogan and Flair.
It was the fact of you had the two biggest names of the 80s finally getting together to go at it, and the fact that it delivered, I think, is the main reason it worked, and it fell through for the rest of the year as well. So you always knew as soon as Hogan had signed, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it against Flair? The fact they opened it with Flair, and it was good enough, and it kept going for the year. Just these two actually be able to work together and actually pull off a good match. It just works for me. Good storytelling. It was simple. It was, I don't like you. I don't like you. We both can't be here.
Del, Hogan and Flair.
Hogan and Flair, as Chris pretty much said there, it's a match we've been waiting for years. We thought, come the summer when Hogan signed, we're maybe going to see a one and done, maybe kind of exchanging victories at best, but they managed to pull it off. The matches all felt big. There's maybe the kind of inclined doubt with the Flair retirement stuff, plus the fact that they've never really getting to see Hogan to work with someone else for a period of 3 or 4 months off the bat. But as a feud goes, it's the two biggest names you can picture. They delivered in the big matches. They can both do a solid promo. There was some innovative stuff in the middle with the segments that they did, really delivered.
Yeah, I mean, this feud, I mean, I say it's very difficult to get wrong. I mean, you could also say that WWF had it and didn't do anything with it, but given the way things are set up with Flair as the world champion and Hogan going in, it was very difficult to write a bad program in terms of it's Hogan and Flair. You don't need to do that much with it. You just, it's one god versus another. Let's put them together and see what happens. So I think from that point of view, I mean, the actual build to it was very good. I mean, it was basically all they were building from about April onwards. So it had the longevity, it had all of that. But for me, the thing that makes this stand out, as we've spoken about earlier, was just the quality of the trio of matches in terms of all quite different. The Clash match was the one that ended with the kind of the fairest count-out finish, but that was quite good. We had the match at Halloween Havoc in the cage with all the interference and all that. But their Bash at the Beach match was, as I say, it wasn't a great match, but it was a great Hulk Hogan Ric Flair match. It was a perfect Hulk Hogan Ric Flair match. I think that makes that certainly puts that into contention for this year. Let's talk about Sandman and Tommy Dreamer. Del, we've been reviewing this feud pretty much since, well, it kind of started before August, I suppose. That's when we kind of picked it up. I mean, the one thing that might knock this down perhaps is match quality, given that we've never really had a great match between these two, nor are we ever going to get one, I suppose. But in terms of captivating television and creating week-to-week storytelling that is as good as I've ever seen, I think this is it.
It's exactly, but I think it's testament to the quality of the two guys in it. As you say, neither one of them's a strong technical wrestler, but as characters, as a feud between two men, it was just amazing TV. I mean, they continually pushed the envelope as well. I mean, me and you were talking back at the August the 30th show with that Singapore Kane segment. We thought, that's that. You can't top that. They did it. And they were doing it all the way to November with that retirement angle. There was strong promos for them. The backstage stuff with Women and Sandman geared up Dreamer. Dreamer then delivers back. It's built a star out of that young guy that was kind of floundering about as a baby face that wasn't really getting taken on with the crowd. As you say, for TV, it's just absolutely unmissable. And whenever you're watching anything between them, you just can't take your eyes off it.
No, I mean, the bit with the Singapore Kane is one of the strongest segments I've ever seen. And in terms of doing that kind of segment in front of that kind of audience could go one of a number of ways.
Yeah.
And it certainly started as one of those where the crowd were kind of like cheering the shots because they were, you know, things to cheer. But by the end, they achieved exactly what they set out to achieve, which was to make Salmon look like an absolute bastard and to make Dreamer look like this like heroic babyface. And then we get to the fake retirement bit, which is just great. I mean, like, if anything, the only major thing they did wrong was that they turned Sandman into a mega babyface when they did the reveal. Yeah. But a great feud. Again, though, I think it's just that it doesn't feel like we've had the blow off to this. It doesn't feel like they've built to a big match, put it in the main event, put it on TV. And okay, this isn't a pay-per-view driven model, so it's not quite like that. And the feud is still ongoing. They've brought in, you know, we've Tommy Caro's come back into the picture and we've got, you know, Cactus Jack's involved and all of that. So I want to see a big culmination of this feud. I kind of want to see Dreamer go over in a real strong way. I think that
would help us for what they can imagine up as a blow off to this, considering what we've seen as well.
Colin, let's speak of Brett and Owen.
Well,
we've spoken about a lot already tonight, so
yeah,
just,
I mean,
surmise it.
It's a feud that started basically in 1993. We're now at the end of 1994, and you get the feeling that it's going to go on for a little bit longer yet. Easily the best feud in WWF this year.
By a mile.
By a mile. And it's still got legs. That's how good it is. It could carry on for a little while yet.
Chris?
Everything that Colin said, the fact that it's been there for the whole year and there's still more to it. The matches as we all pretty much said, matches of the year, candidates, every time them two are in the ring together. I can't see anything but more from these two and being the same level.
Chris, your nomination for your winner for Feud of the Year. I'm going to get that right at some point. Your winner of Feud of the Year.
It has to go for Bret and Owen, just for the fact that it's been there for the whole year.
Del.
It's very tricky, Bob. Great match quality with Bret Owen, but the ECW mark, I mean, he's got to go for Sandman Dreamer.
Colin.
Bret and Owen.
No, I'll stick with it. I was thinking of going with Hogan and Flair, but I did start the show with Bret and Owen as my Feud of the Year, so I'll stick with that for a number of reasons. So yeah, our Feud of the Year, and quite rightly so, Bret and Owen, for all the reasons we discussed in the last 2 hours plus. Right, onwards. Rising Star of 1994. Chris, your nominations?
1-2-3 Kid and Chris Benoit.
Del.
3 for me, Bob. No order. Owen Hart, Diesel, and Shane Douglas.
Colin.
Just the 2 for me. I've got Owen Hart and the 1-2-3 Kid.
Right. And I have got Sabu. Whether we can call him a Rising Star or not, we'll debate. I've got Diesel and I've got Owen Hart. Let's start. Well, again, we're covering our old ground here, so I guess we'll try and speed things up. Let's talk about a couple of guys we haven't spoken about. Let's talk about Sabu, Del. Again, whether he merits Rising Star, given that I think I nominated him for that last year as well. But he's innovating in a way that nobody else is getting close to in ring wise.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff we'll see from him, Bob, as you say, it's just no one else does it. We've seen that ladder match at WrestleMania. Sabu does that on a Tuesday night in front of 500 people in Philly. It's kind of one of those ones where you call it a rising star, you kind of think of a young guy coming through, is he going to get his shot? Sandman, I think, Sabu at this point, he's pushing, I think, about 30, but he's got that New Japan deal that's came through, he's got history there, he's doing captivating stuff in ECW. Is it a case where we might see him in one of the Nationals? Would he be as captivating as he is at the minute with that kind of national audience having a bit of kind of putting the shackles on him? But I can totally agree with you. He's just an absolutely innovative athlete. I mean, a lot of the time you'll even see him missing these moves, but that's just tantamount to what he does, and no one else dares take the risks that he does.
Part of the package, really, isn't it? We'll skip over Owen and Diesel just because we've discussed those guys so much already tonight. Chris, talks about Chris Benoit.
He is the quintessential strong style wrestler, and it's something that's been missing for a while. He's not that big, but he is very powerful. He's solid sort of wrestling technique. I think if the right gimmick or even just the right push, I could see him doing something in one of the bigger companies, definitely at a sort of mid-card title level. Sort of as of now, so you could put the IC belt on him or the US belt on him, and he would have solid matches night in, night out with pretty much most of your roster. And I think it's something that's sort of lacking at the minute, as sort of that the WWF could definitely do with, is someone that can just sort of, you can put him in with anyone and you know that you're going to get a good match out of him. And he has Japanese pedigree and Mexican pedigree. So you've got a sort of mashup of styles there as well.
Colin, talk to me about the kid.
Very young, very promising young talent. He's as quick as lightning. I think at one point he was called the Lightning.
I was going to say, no pun intended.
No pun intended. He's proven in his matches with people like Razor Ramon, with Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, he is capable of keeping up with them and being a pretty good foil to other talents. pedigrees. I think he is probably too small to make the top guys. I can't see him being a WWF champion ever because, I mean, they struggle to keep the belt on Bret Hart and he's not exactly small in itself. So, but he is capable of wrestling anybody.
I've got Shane Douglas written on my list. I don't remember anyone. No one mentioned Douglas, did they?
That's me, Bob.
Oh, right, go on.
It's got a caveat on it, to be fair. For me, Shane Douglas is just in an absolutely blinding year in ECW.
I'm not sure he really... Well, I suppose he could do, given that he's been around a while, was kind of going to be the wider observation.
Well, that's the caveat for me, Bob. I'm actually basing Shane Douglas as a rising star if and or when he gets the chance to go to a national promotion. For me, he's a big fish in a small pond at the minute. He's been about, he's got the experience. He can wrestle with the best of them. He's as good a talker as you're going to see. But I think he needs that chance to be given a shot at a national promotion. That's why I've marked him down for a rising star.
Okay. Yeah, we spoke about everyone. Chris, your nominator, your winner. I'll get that right at some point. I will.
My winner is going with Benoit.
Del.
Owen Hart.
Colin.
Owen Hart.
And a hat trick with me for Owen Hart, for all of the reasons we spoke about in this show. All right, we're on to the home stretch. God, we've gone long tonight. We'll start. We've got basically a trio of awards. We've got best worker, best talker, and wrestler of the year. Wrestler of the year is kind of MVP, so just the all-round package. But we'll start with best worker of the year. We'll rattle through these because we pretty much discussed everybody, really. Chris, your nominations.
Owen Hart. Steven Regal, Steve Austin.
Owen, Regal, Austin. Okay. Del.
For me, only one, Bob. Best worker in the world at the minute, Bret Hitman Hart.
Colin.
Steve Austin, Bret Hart, and Razor Ramon.
And I have on worker of the year, Sabu, Ric Flair, surprised nobody mentioned Flair, and Bret Hart. Go on, Chris, talk about Austin.
Austin this year has just sort of been consistently good. You know, he had matches with Johnny B. Badd, he's had matches with Steamboat, and it's what I love about wrestling. It's good, solid, fundamental chain wrestling at times.
Such a good heel also, as well. Such a good heel.
And it's that as well, the heel tactics that he comes out with. The times when he does some time wasting, or it's the little sort of eons that he puts on something that he does just to cheat slightly. I absolutely love it. I will just say the reasons I've done workers, my workers are different to my rest of the year. So that's why I've not gone with like Brett, like most of you have.
How can you not have Brett in this one though? I mean,
because I've gone worker of the year and rest of the year is two different things.
I've got Brett in both.
It was so I could have basically five people instead of just three.
Alright, fair enough. Chris, your winner of Best Worker of 1994.
Austin.
Del.
Bret Hart.
Colin.
Bret Hart.
Yeah, hat trick with Brett. No question about that for me. Best Talker of the Year. This could be fun. Chris.
Regal, Flair, and Douglas.
Del.
Again, just the one for me, Bob. Franchise Shane Douglas.
Colin.
Ric Flair, HBK.
And I have Paulie Dangerously. Surprised nobody mentioned him. I know he's not a wrestler, but I think he qualifies here. Shane Douglas, Ric Flair, and an honourable mention to Cactus Jack as well. Just because I limited it to three. We've pretty much discussed everyone about this point in the show. I mean, just to say about Douglas, I mean, not that we've discussed him hugely. Douglas is just promo after promo. And I can't recall, like, even Flair I don't think was as consistent as this year. Like, I could play you every Shane Douglas promo one after another and they were all excellent or better. And yeah, the main disappointment really is that at times he hasn't been given kind of the meat to work with to cut a great promo about a great feud. Because I think if you go back to that promo he cut the night the line was crossed in February, or when the big kind of promo in August, just both phenomenal. And go back and seek those shows out, seek those promos out. And the rest of the time, even when he hasn't been given gold to work with, he's turned it into gold. Chris, your winner, promo of the year.
Flair.
Del.
Franchise Shane Douglas, Bob.
Colin.
Flair.
And I've gone with Douglas, so we'll split that award for best talker, and I think rightly so. Flair is as good as it gets, and Douglas has been, I'd argue, pushing him at times in terms of the overall quality. And we will finish with a big one. Wrestler of the year, MVP of the year. Chris, your nominations.
Razor and Brett.
Del.
Three for me, Bob. Hulk Hogan, WCW. Bret Hart, WWF. And Ric Flair, WCW.
Colin.
I've got Bret Hart and Razor Ramon.
Oh, interesting. I've got Hart, Douglas and Flair are my three. We've spoken about them all, so I think we'll talk about the winner at the end. But Chris, your winner of this award.
Brett.
Del.
Wait, I've booked this one, Bob. Absolute total package, and I don't think you can argue with Ric Flair.
Colin.
I've gone for Bret Hart.
Ah, we're going to split again. Ric Flair, I've gone for as well. So we've got two on each side for that. Yeah, I mean, again, I think Flair and Bret can kind of share the overall main part. I think that's about right, in that Flair hasn't wrestled enough. Because the thing with Bret was that every match he had was at least very good. It's very different. Like, I can show you kind of quite placid Ric Flair matches if I look hard enough. I don't think Bret Hart has those matches, or I don't think he has this year anyway. Bret's been put in great spots wherever he's been. He's created greatness out of the spot wherever he's been, regardless of whether it's good or not. And he's been great. And Flair just, as an overall package, I mean, to come into the year as a babyface champion, to pivot to being a heel, to have a great feud with Hulk Hogan, and then to retire in October, I think either of those, I think an honour, I don't mind saying those two share. But anyway, that will do that. Boy, we've gone long tonight. And that will do that, really. This is the end of 1994. So I think that was a comprehensive review of the year. I'd like to thank, firstly, Chris Lacey.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's been a pleasure this year.
Tonight's been great, but certainly this year. Chris, you're on Twitter, and tell us about your wrestling podcast.
I am on Twitter personally as Lacey555666, but you can hear my thoughts and ambling hatred of Wahoo McDaniels on my podcast Super Brawls, where me and Tom review every WCW event from Starrcade 83 onwards.
You're going to be catching up with us soon, aren't you? You're on to about 85 now, aren't you?
87 was recorded to break the magical window just before Christmas. It's waiting to go up, and then we start into 88, which is the first year of regular shows.
And where can people find us, Chris?
You can find us on Twitter at Super Brawls. We're on iTunes at Super Brawls, and we're also on Facebook at Super Brawls.
That's that. Del Muir.
Nice and simple.
Del Muir, thank you very much for joining me this year for all the ECW stuff and all that.
Yeah, it's been a great year, great times in each promotion for respectful reasons. We went long tonight, about, 3 hours of recording, but it has pretty much summed up the good, the bad, and the ugly of the year, I think.
I think it'll cut to about 2:15, I think, by the time we finish. But yeah, we've been here quite a long time, but I think it's been worth it. I even tried to rattle through towards the end. Del, you're on Twitter?
Yep. Twitter, Del, DEL_Muir, MUIR, modern stuff, flashbacks to the past and general nonsense.
And Colin Junkins. Colin, you appear semi-regularly, but it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Colin, you're on Twitter?
I am, at Colin Junkins.
That's simple. Colin, thanks so much for all your contributions both tonight and this year.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to 1995.
That's very much so. And I've been Bob Bamber. You can find me on Twitter at Bobby Bamber. You can find the project on Twitter at Wrestling20YRS. We have our website, Wrestling20YRS.com, for all of your old episodes and blogs and things like that. Facebook.com/Wrestling20YRS. We're on iTunes and all that other stuff as well. You can find us there, RSS feed. It's all on the website. This has gone on a long time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed all the podcasts this year. So 95 is setting up to be a very good year. And I'm very much looking forward to we're at 20 years ago, Mariner, very much the highs and lows of 94, shall we say. And that will do that. I've been Bob Bamber. This has been the 1994 end of year review episode of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. And until next time, goodbye.